We don't stop. Come on.
The official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. This is The Playbook with Satyar Shah and John Chang.
What is up? It is Throwback Thursday here on Sportsnet 650. It is The Playbook with Sat and John. Bick Nazar behind the boards producing the show. DJ Honey Brown's going to be spinning the records today, so get your requests in. And what a day it is, because not only is Sportsnet 650 the home of the Canucks, it's also the new home of the Vancouver Giants. Welcome aboard. The G-Men are now part of the 650 crew, John.
Oh, I love it. Home of Vancouver hockey right here, 650. It is the place to be upcoming. What a great season of hockey that's still to come. And, you know, I grew up as a big Giants fan. The golden years of Giants hockey, where fans like myself, we were spoiled. You know, there were some great players to come through, some championships, some good memories. And I believe the Giants are on the rise yet again. We saw them back in the playoffs for the first time in a while last season. They fell in seven in the first round to their new rivals, I suppose, the Victoria Royals. But it's a big year for the Giants in the sense that so much is happening locally. They have the World Juniors hosted between them and Vancouver and Victoria. And then, of course, the NHL draft. And it's all going to be happening in the backyard for both the Canucks and the Vancouver Giants. So a very exciting time here.
And they have one of the best prospects to play on that team in a few years. And that is Bowen Byram. And, of course, Tyler Benson was also a very highly touted prospect, and as he's most likely to play in Bakersfield of the AHL next season, so he most likely will not be an overager with the Giants next year. But you look at Bowen Byram, who right now looks like he's going to be a top 10 pick in next year's draft, if not higher. So it's going to be fun to keep an eye on his progress. We're going to talk to the new GM of the Giants, Barkley Parnetta, coming up just after 9:35. We'll get his thoughts on joining not only the Vancouver Giants as the team's general manager a little while ago, but also, you know, what's ahead, and especially with the broadcast we're going to have here on Sportsnet 650 for the Giants all season. All 68 games will be broadcast on Sportsnet 650, and that includes the season opener, September 21st, Friday, against Everett Silvertip. So welcome aboard, and we have a jam-packed show for you today. Brock Besser is going to join us alongside Keith Ballard, his head coach at the Beauty League, which is being held in Minnesota, of course. So Brock Besser is going to join us with Keith Ballard at 10. So we'll get the latest on how he's been playing. And he's played two games in the Beauty League so far and two hat tricks.
Yeah.
So not bad.
Not bad.
I think Brock Besser's wrist and back are looking just fine. And he spoke to Canucks .com, well, the Canucks website, and they released some sound bites of him talking about his injury and how tough it was to overcome that and how scary it was when he was laying on the ice against the Minnesota Wild at home, not knowing if how serious that injury was. So we'll talk to Brock, who expects he'll be ready to go come training camp. And hey, if the Beauty League is any indication, I think he's going to be just fine. We're going to talk to Stu Cowan out of Montreal coming up at 11. We're waiting for Max Pacioretty to get moved and all the other things circulating around the Montreal Canadiens. Now, the biggest story, of course, yesterday was Kawhi Leonard getting traded to the Toronto Raptors. And lo and behold, surprise, surprise, Kawhi Leonard, according to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, is warming up to the idea of playing for the Raptors, as if he was going to walk away from $20 million and essentially sabotage his own future in the NBA. Of course, Kawhi Leonard was always going to show up and play for the Raptors.
Oh, yeah, and there were reports yesterday after the trade was sort of executed that originally, he had no interest in playing for the Raptors, but as you say, there's $20 million reasons as to why he might want to do exactly that and just give Toronto a chance. You know, it's not exactly the ideal location if you're an NBA star like him, but give it a chance. Maybe he does fall in love with the city. Maybe he does fall in love with Drake, and he really appreciates what Masai Ujiri is doing there for the Raptors and decides this is where I want to be long-term, and hopefully other star players in next year's free agency will be convinced to join him.
What happens with Kawhi, the thing that's in his interest is to play well. If he wants to get that money from any team, he's going to have to play well. You can't essentially take 2 years off in the NBA, regardless of how good you've been, coming off an injury especially, and expect teams to line up and give you the money you want. And things can change in a year's time. What if, as Bick mentioned yesterday, what if the LA Lakers trade for Anthony Davis because he wants out of New Orleans? Or what if Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, or whoever on the Lakers end up being stars like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown? And the Celtics, well, they didn't want to move Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum for Kawhi Leonard. They would have done so maybe a year ago, but you wait a year, all of a sudden those guys emerge, and you're not as willing to trade those players. There's no guarantee Kawhi is going to end up with the Lakers. He might go to the Clippers, but regardless of where he ends up next season, it is in his best interest not only to show up, but to play his butt off as a Toronto Raptor. That's going to help redeem his image, which has taken a hit over the past year. It'll make other teams around the league realize how good he still is, and it only benefits him long term. So, of course, Kawhi Leonard is going to show up, and I would expect he's going to play hard. Now, the other part about this story, which I think is fascinating, John, is how in the world did an organization like the San Antonio Spurs, known as one of the best, most well-run, well-oiled machines anywhere? I remember hearing stories about Canucks management going and meeting with Spurs personnel to get an idea of how to run a franchise, because that's how good they are. They're good at keeping people happy. Everybody buys in. Nobody ever wants out. Then all of a sudden, Kawhi Leonard, maybe their second best player they've ever had on the team after Tim Duncan, now he wants out. He doesn't want to play for Craig Popovich. He doesn't trust the franchise. How does that happen? Well, yesterday I was listening to the Low Post podcast from Zach Lowe, and he had Kevin Arnowitz on. And take a listen to what Kevin Arnowitz says here about the culture in San Antonio and how it may not all have been dependent on Greg Popovich. Have a listen.
You know, I've taken an interest the last few years in organizational cultures. It's just something I like studying. Organisms are interesting, yada, yada, yada. And I feel like we are sort of, sports has gone through this sort of business management organizational culture era. And everyone's trying to remember Spurs East, Spurs Mountain West, Spurs this, Spurs that. And when you start really breaking it down, and it is, I don't mean this is any disrespect to management in San Antonio. What I'm starting to learn, and I don't even think I knew this as acutely two and a half years ago, but it was really about Duncan. Like, at the end of the day, yes, there are organizational principles, and certainly certain front offices are managed better and more thoughtfully than others. But at the end of the day, your team's culture is going to be set by your team leader, your best player. And you can try to integrate systems from this other team that you used to be the assistant GM at, or bring over a member of their tree, you know, to be your GM or your even your coach. But at the end of the day, it is really about, I'd say, you know, a large percentage, a plurality, if not a majority, about your best player.
That's Kevin Arnowitz on the Low Post podcast from ESPN with Zach Lowe, essentially saying culture is built not just from your owner, from your GM, from your head coach. It really starts with your best player. They are the ones that really set the tone within a franchise. Because I'm surprised, John. Why would Greg Popovich get into this situation? But if you look at it that way, the way Kevin Arnowitz explained, you take Tim Duncan out and how everybody fell in line behind him because he was all about the Spurs. He was completely committed to the team, and he bought in fully to what Greg Popovich was selling. He's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What does that tell you about the true culture of the best sports teams? It begins with your best players. That's really where it ends, starts and ends.
A coach can obviously help a player get into the right place strategically, set up the right plays and all this, but it does absolutely have to be reverberated by your best player, your leader on the court, your leader on the field, your leader on the ice. And with the Vancouver Canucks, keep in mind, they're two best players. They're leaders emotionally and on the ice, Daniel and Henrik Sedin, now retiring. Now, no one is expecting guys like Jay Beagle and Antoine Roussel to be the best players, but you still need to have and maintain that level of culture where it's all about accountability and putting in the work.
Yeah, but you can create that with guys like Jay Beagle, Brandon Sutter, Eric Goodbranson. It has to start when guys like Bo Horvat, Brock Besser really take over as the leaders of the team. If they can set the tone as the new faces of the franchise, mm-hmm. then everyone's going to fall in line. Your best players have to be the ones to take that over. Sure, it's nice to have guys like Beagle around. His leadership's good. Brandon Sutter's leadership is, I guess, positive. All these other things that you want to talk about, these guys that help bring these guys along. But they're just the help, mm-hmm. so to speak. the real work is going to have to be laid down by the best players in this franchise. Brock Besser, one thing we see from him, and we're going to have him on the show coming up at 10 a.m.
Right.
You see that mentality he has. It's pretty similar to the stoicism Marcus Naslin had, to the humbleness that Trevor Linden displayed when he was playing for the Vancouver Canucks. You saw it similarly from Henrik and Daniel Sedin. He seems to be cut from the same cloth. You can say the same thing about Bo Horvat, maybe, if his leadership qualities start shining at some point, which I'm not sure they have at this stage yet. But they're the ones that are truly going to set the culture for this team moving forward. It's not going to be the guys on the fourth line. It's not going to be the guys on the third pairing. It's not going to be the head coach. Mm-hmm. The head coach helps out, sure. The GM helps out, but it's going to start with your best players. You want a winning culture? You want a culture where guys fall in line? It's going to have to start when these young guys are ready to take over that position.
I concur.
That's what it's going to be.
I concur. It's that Jay Beagle and Anton Roussel will be there to echo the sentiments that Brock and Bo is going to lay out for the team, and probably will so over the next five, six, half dozen years, however long they end up staying in Vancouver.
But that's what it's going to take. It's going to have to take them to set that tone, set that culture. Mm-hmm. When are they going to be ready for that? That's going to be anybody's guess.
Well, I mean, with Daniel and Henrik only deciding to retire at the end of this season, I don't think it was necessary for Bo to show those leadership qualities right away. You know, just let Daniel and Henrik continue to be the voice of that locker room. But now that they're gone, this next season is pretty critical to see who is going to emerge as the de facto leader of that locker room. And I think a lot of Canucks fans already have Bo Horvat tabbed as the next captain of the Vancouver Canucks.
It also comes down to, we see the dedication, and that's part of leadership, and we've talked about that earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
In relation to Brock, it's awesome that he's playing in the Beauty League, but that's the passion there, that he's coming off this injury. Nobody would have begrudged him if he said, you know what, I don't need to play in this league. I can wait another 3 weeks, month, get myself 100, perfect. I'm sure he's 100% right now.
Yeah.
But you can understand that maybe there's some reticence and he didn't want to play in this league. But the guy loves hockey that much that he wants to be back as soon as he can onto the ice. It was a devastating injury.
Oh, yeah.
It could have been a lot worse, and he's walking away great, and he just wants to play. And this is what you want to see, the steps towards leadership. We're not saying he's the best leader right now, but we're saying he's on that hierarchy or on that path to get there.
Well, one thing he's mentioned is, I'm not just coming to camp to be ready for camp. I wanted to come to camp and be better. He wants to be better once he gets to camp. And that's what we talked about, too, the other day, about you want to be the best. You want to be a real, true superstar. You have to work harder than anybody else. You have to put that work in. It's not about being there 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. Mm-hmm. It is 7 days a week, 24/7. That's the reality of becoming a superstar. Viking's dad is chiming in on Twitter about this. It says, in my opinion, Bo, Brock, and Stetcher are perfect guys to carry our leadership group forward as they are fully committed to being the best they can on and off the ice. To me, they're already our leaders. And that's going to be the real telling point when those guys truly become the faces of the franchise. They're getting there soon. But we just mentioned Brock, Bo Horvat. We talked about his skating. He's improved every single year. You don't improve like that unless you put the work in. Mm-hmm. So he's completely dedicated. You heard Stetcher's stories. You want a guy who's undersized. All the odds were stacked against him.
Undrafted.
He works harder than anybody else to be in top condition. He works his butt off. Unreal amount of work this kid puts in. That's what you're going to need. And these are the guys that have to set the culture. It's not going to be some fourth line player. It's not going to be some veteran who's going to play a bit part for a couple years. It's going to be these players who set the tone.
Absolutely. But you still need to have the rest of the locker room buy in. I understand what you did by signing Jay Beagle and Anton Roussel. You've got guys who are going to fall in line. You've got guys who are going to continue that to echo those sentiments, whereas some players, maybe they won't. Maybe they wouldn't as much as Jay Beagle did. What did we hear about Jay Beagle all offseason when the Canucks signed him in July 1? The guy's a great character in the locker room. You know, he doesn't usurp the leadership role. He simply just adds to it. And that's what is going to help a young guy like Bo Horvat and young guys like Brock and Troy, is that you need to have the veterans who are willing to buy into some of the younger guys, because not every veteran would be okay necessarily to have someone who's younger than him and far less experienced than him become the voice of that locker room.
Well,
I don't think those guys, Anton Roussel or Jay Beagle, are going to have any issues.
No, and nor should they. If they had issues with that, then you definitely signed the wrong players. Any player that has an issue with a younger player taking on a leadership group is not a guy you want in your locker room. And I'm not sure that's been the case with anybody on this team. But to me, when I look at that situation in San Antonio, and you wonder, what happened to Greg Popovich's genius? Mm-hmm. What happened to Phil Jackson when he went to New York? Well, he didn't have Kobe Bryant. He didn't have Shaq. He didn't have Michael Jordan. Pop didn't have Tim Duncan setting the tone. And as you can tell from Kawhi Leonard, he wasn't ready to fall in line and just drink the Kool-Aid, so to speak.
Mm.
And I'm not saying Brock, Bo, and Stetcher have to drink the proverbial Kool-Aid, but they have to set the tone. They have to be completely dedicated and buying into what the team is selling. And if they buy in and they're fully dedicated and they see themselves as lifelong Canucks, they're going to do anything possible to win, all those other players fall in line.
Mm-hmm. And the franchise kind of takes on the personality of the team.
Yeah.
Or
the players, the leaders of the team.
Of the best players, sorry. Mm-hmm. We just saw with the Canucks, Henrik and Daniel. A lot of what they did was subtle but decisive. And everyone kind of followed that. We just saw the Washington Capitals. They wore their emotions on the sleeve. Why? Mm-hmm. Alex Ovechkin mm-hmm. wore his emotions on the sleeve. And that's kind of how it goes, because everyone's careers are kind of hanging the balance on that one player. And that's what GMs, coaches have turnover, because the players have the talent. You need to have the talent no matter what. And they get risen to the top of the hierarchy of the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have that, someone here is going to have to step up. And everyone's got to follow through in that mold. And if it's Brock, there will be a quietness to it, but it'll have to be him, or it'll have to be Bo, whoever it is.
That's just the reality. You're not going to be able to build that culture with guys who don't move the needle, because at the end, regardless of how good of a leader somebody is and how hard somebody works, people only follow along with guys that can lead the way. And leading the way doesn't mean by somebody who shows up and has a rah-rah speech. And that is, I mean, you're leading the way by helping the team win. You're leading the way by being the most valuable player on the ice.
The go-to guy.
When people say leading by example, they don't mean, oh, you know, just look at this guy and just follow along what he does. It's like, no, this guy goes out and he gets it done.
Mm-hmm.
And he helps the team win. That's how people buy in. They don't buy into some dude who just goes out and does a couple of good things every once in a while. If you help your team win, everybody falls in line. You have to have the best of everything.
Right. And
you look at Chicago, Jonathan Toews, for instance. Him and Patrick Kane and Duncan Keith, they set the tone for that team.
Mm-hmm.
You saw the swagger they had. It came from those guys.
The culture of your locker room, as Vic is saying, is emulated within the personality of your best players. And Brock and Bo, they have one thing in common, in that they're soft-spoken, they're humble, but they're hungry. And that, again, if you watch the recent video that Canucks.com came out with regarding Brock Besser, first of all, he just said that, I'm humbled that I'm here. I'm humbled that I'm here. Well, that humbleness, of course, in your first year as a rookie, we can appreciate that. But at some point, probably start as soon as next season here, that humbleness is going to turn into just understanding that you belong here, and it's now your turn to lead this franchise to its next stage of glory, which I think as Canucks fans, we understand it's coming soon. It's coming soon with more talented young players still to get added to the roster.
Yeah, Viking Stat chimes in again on Twitter. I'm already sold on Bo, Brock, Stetcher, and if Pettersson and Hughes are who we think they are, talent, character, and confidence, we're going to be looking good soon. That is the hope. The hope is these are the players who truly are as good as we think they are, and they can set the tone. Because they're the ones. Mm-hmm. They really are. I mean, as much consternation as there has been about these free agent signings and all the work this team has done around the margins or hasn't done around the margins, and it all adds up. It absolutely does. All these things matter over the long term. But really, the only thing that matters for this team for the next 3, 4, 5 years that matters the most is these young guys living up to their potential, because that's going to set the tone. That's going to get this franchise on the right track again. It's not going to be anything else. And it's going to be the young guys. And one of the young guys who's going to be vying for a spot joined the starting lineup today with Perry Sulkowski, Corey Hirsch in for James Cebulski, and of course, Rick Dhaliwal, Jonathan Dahlin. And you want to talk about a kid who is driven as well and also really good friends with Elias Pettersson? This is the kid you want to take a look at. One of the kids that we all think is going to really push for a spot. And here's Dahlin talking about what he needs to do to earn a spot on this team.
Well, I think a big thing for me is to come into training camp in as good shape I can be. And then do a pretty good result there on the testing. And then... of course, I have to play really good on the ice and show that I can compete against the stronger players and on the small rink and those parts. So I think they want to see a lot of me if I'm going to push for a roster spot.
That's Jonathan Dahlin, and this is a kid who is going to work really hard as well. When you look at his progress over the past year, he's a guy who was drafted in the second round by the Ottawa Senators, and at this stage is viewed around the National Hockey League as a first-round talent. Again, you don't get there after being drafted unless you work hard and you have the talent, and that's a kid who does. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if we're sitting here 2 months from now talking about how Jonathan Dahlin is pushing for a spot on this team.
I think it speaks volumes about his character and his ability when last year at training camp, he unfortunately went down with mono, and that usually takes players out of their comfort zone and routine for a couple of months, right? It's a lot of work to just put on the weight that you might have lost and to get back to that fitness level. But then he goes overseas back to Sweden. What does he do? He dominates, and he leads Timrå back into the SHL, right, where they were having to play for the qualification, and they got it through. They're promoted, and now he gets to leave Timrå with knowing that he's taking care of business in Sweden. So I expect Jonathan Dahlin will indeed be a big role for this team, and it helps that he has that chemistry with Peterson, going back to their days in Timrå 2 years ago.
Well, if they play on the same line, which that remains to be seen. But here is the fascinating part about all the roster battles on this team. If Dahlin makes it and Leipzig makes it, and you have Pettersson on the team, that means maybe somebody else doesn't make it in. So there are going to be multiple scenarios to go through when you're looking at who can and cannot make this team and what happens next. But Jonathan Dahlin is a kid, regardless of how we may pencil him in and how some may look at it as, maybe you start him off in Utica. Well, he doesn't see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Vancouver Canucks have said, if guys show up to camp and are better than the veterans and better than any other young players and earn a spot, we'll make room for them. So we'll hold their feet to the fire on that one. If you're going to sit here and talk about, we're going to make room for a kid who deserves to be here, then if he does deserve to be there, you better make room.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see if they'll hold true to that come training camp.
I can't wait to see it. There's a lot of competition, not a lot of jobs available, and a lot of players who are hungry for that action in the NHL. That's exactly what you want for a team that you struggled last season, so it's all about getting better.
We're going to talk to Barclay Parnetta, the GM of the Vancouver Giants, because Sportsnet 650 is the new home of the Vancouver Giants, and it all starts September 21st, the season opener against the Everett Silvertips. You're going to hear that game right here on Sportsnet 650. All 68 Giants games will be aired on Sportsnet 650, so we look forward to that. A great new partnership. We have truly become the home of hockey in Vancouver.
Love it, baby.
So it's going to be a lot of fun to talk to him, and we'll get a sense of how the team is shaping up for this season. What do you expect to see from Bowen Byram? And we have more Canucks talk, NFL talk, NBA talk, a lot to cover right here on Sportsnet 650.
It's the Playbook with Satyar Shah and John Jang on Sportsnet 650.
Smooth beats on Throwback Thursday. Hashtag TBT here on the Playbook with Sat, John, and DJ Honey Brown, Bic Nazar. Nicely done, Bic. We're going to be talking to the GM of the Vancouver Giants, Barclay Parnetta, coming up in a few minutes here, because we have become the new home of the Vancouver Giants here on Sportsnet 650. So welcome aboard, G-Men. We're happy to have you along, and we have now become the official home of hockey in Vancouver.
Hence living for the city.
Yes, you got it. You got that. So it's going to be a lot of fun to talk to him, get a sense of how the season is going to be unfolding starting in September. And the cool thing with Barclay, too, is he started off working as a scout within the Giants organization. He actually spent a couple of years scouting in the NHL as well, and then he moved on to the Tri-City Americans for 8 years, where he was the assistant GM and a head of scouting for that team. And a couple of players he's drafted in recent years with that organization or have gone on to the NHL or are close to going to the NHL. One is Brandon Carlo.
Mm-hmm.
The big talented defenseman within the Bruins system. And of course, you also have Michael Rasmussen, who was a first round pick of the Detroit Red Wings a couple years ago, who has a very good future. And he's a guy who is from the lower mainland and has a ton of talent as well. So it'll be fun to talk to Barclay Parnetta, not only about their new partnership with Sportsnet 650, but how the season's going to unfold, especially with the talented blue line they have that includes Bowen Byram. And when you look at the 2019 NHL entry draft and what we talked about earlier about the Canucks, John, if you can make a couple of moves by the time the deadline rolls around to add a couple extra picks for next year's draft, I think fans would be so excited about that. Because now they've already added an extra sixth-round pick in a trade they made at this year's draft in Dallas. They traded down, got an extra six. So they have a couple extra picks now already. Keep adding more. And if they can do that, all of a sudden you're staring at maybe having 10, 11 picks in next year's draft. That, I think, would really excite this fan base with the draft being held in Vancouver.
Yeah, give me some double-digit numbers on those draft picks. The more the merrier, because drafting is not an exact science, despite how well the Canucks seemingly have drafted over the past couple of years. Just add more to the arsenal. I mean, Petrus Palmu being a late-round addition by the Canucks, and the fact that he's got an entry-level contract now and he's starting professional hockey, likely with Utica Comets this season, that's a pretty good win. And I know you're excited for a guy like Tyler Madden, who they also picked up later on. And these guys all have upside, but you don't get them unless you have those late-round draft picks.
What I liked a lot, even the sixth-round draft picks, you have Petrus Palmu, you look at the Artem Manyukian kid they picked up from the KHL.
Couldn't see him at the summer showdown.
No, he had some other obligations that he couldn't make it out here. But you're talking about two guys who are overagers but have a lot of talent. And the thing is, sometimes when it comes to players like that, you don't want to give them a contract right off the bat because it counts against your 50 contracts. You want to have flexibility as an organization. So it's hard to go out and just sign a bunch of undrafted free agents every year to see if one or two make it. So teams aren't as willing to just sign guys. But if you draft somebody in the sixth round, you retain that person, that player's rights for a few years, and you don't have to sign him. And that creates a perfect scenario where you can take a flyer on a guy like Palmu or a Manyukian, and if they do show promise, then you sign him in a year or so. That's what happened with Petrus Palmu. So even sixth and seventh round draft picks have value because you can grab guys with upside and stash them away for a couple years and see if they become anything. Mm-hmm. You saw with Yannick Hansen, one of the last picks in the draft, he turned out to be a pretty good NHL hockey player. Oftentimes, you're not going to find a Henrik Zetterberg that late in the draft.
No,
it can't
happen.
Yeah. Generally speaking, it's hard to get, but you can find guys who help you and help you get to a certain stage and have some talent. So the more picks you have, even sixth and seventh round ones, do not discount the value of those draft picks.
And you can just add more and eventually build up a succession plan for all of your positions. I didn't expect the Vancouver Canucks to draft a goaltender this past draft out of Dallas, but they did exactly that, picking up Matt Thiessen. And they're very excited about him. He was their last pick in the seventh round to finish that draft.
And he's going to the NCAA for a few years, so they don't have to sign him
exactly.
For at least two or three years. He doesn't really have to clog up the situation for them down in Utica. And in a couple of years, if one of Demko or DiPietro aren't what we expected them to be, or if one gets traded, you have another guy that potentially could be pretty good. And a lot of people are already talking within the goalie world that Thiessen was a really good bargain pickup by the Canucks that late in the draft. So never discount the value of late-round draft picks.
It's always good to have more. For me, the draft, especially after the second, maybe third rounds, it's just a buckshot mentality where you're just trying to spread as much as you can and pick up as much as you can. At that point, the odds are in your favor that one or two or three, and hopefully more than that, will eventually pan out. But you never really know.
Yeah, this year the Canucks picked up Quinn Hughes, seventh overall. Next year, obviously, the apple in everybody's eye is Jack Hughes, Quinn's brother. And would that not be a coup if the Canucks somehow ended up with the first overall pick and drafted Jack Hughes, and you have the brother duo here for the next decade at least? But would it be the worst thing in the world if you pick a little bit later and end up with Bowen Byram, for instance?
No, I don't think so.
Now, he does play the left side, and you already have Ylevi and Hughes who play the left side, but Edler's not going to be here forever. So if you have a left side of Bowen Byram, Quinn Hughes, and Ole Ylevi moving forward, not too shabby. So, if the Canucks don't end up making the playoffs next year, and that's going to be quite the feat for this organization. I mean, it's just going to be another year in the process, and maybe they'll be a bit more entertaining, maybe they'll be a bit more competitive certain nights, but realistically speaking, making the playoffs is a bit of a pipe dream. So you're going to end up with a top 10 pick or lottery pick for sure, or very likely to do so. And again, you may not get the first overall pick, but considering the amount of talent that we're already talking about when it comes to 2019 with guys like Bowen Byram, you're still going to come away with a player that's going to be a big part of the solution moving forward.
I like Bowen Byram a lot in the sense that he played when he was so young. He's 17 now, but he elevated his game a step further in the playoffs. Seven-game series against the Royals, and he was a point-per-game guy, including three goals. Yeah. And I know, Sat, you and I, we went actually down there for a game to see it live at the Langley Event Center, and the one player we couldn't stop talking and watching was Bowen Byram. He forces you to pay attention to him.
Yeah, he stands out. Mm-hmm. It's not really hard to notice Bowen Byram when he's on the ice, and that just tells you about how much talent this kid has. So he's a guy that I'm going to be excited to keep an eye on, and he played for the U18 and U17 teams this past year as well, and he was already invited to the camp for the World Juniors team. So you're talking about a kid who's already on the radar to be on the World Junior team this year, and he hasn't even turned 18 yet.
Right. Very impressive. So if he manages to accomplish that feat, which by the way is already impressive, so many good storylines about him. He plays in Vancouver with the Giants. The World Juniors, of course, co-hosted here with Vancouver and Victoria. So many things associated to the city. The draft, of course, being the final cherry on top.
And, of course, we have a new partnership with the Vancouver Giants, Sportsnet 650. Barkley Parnetta, the GM, the new GM of the Giants, joins us on the line. Number one, we haven't had a chance to talk to you, Barkley, since you've been appointed the GM. So congratulations and welcome aboard.
Oh, thanks, Sat and John. I'm really excited about the opportunity here and excited to be working with you guys at Sportsnet 650.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's what we're excited about as well. We've now become the official home of hockey, not just the Canucks, a new home of the Vancouver Giants as well. And we look forward to partnering up and talking a lot about this team. But, you know, I think when you look at the amount of coverage that we can have for the Giants, we're going to be making sure that the team gets the full coverage it deserves this year.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome. I think people will be tuning in already to the station in regards to that hockey aspect. And it for you guys, it's great. And for us, it's great. It gives us some really good exposure.
Yeah, and before we get into, you know, Bowen Byram and everything, I think your story is really compelling as well, because you started off being a scout within the Giants organization. You spent a few years in the NHL and then past 8 years with the Tri-City Americans as your assistant GM most recently, and also the head of scouting and development. And, you know, when you were a scout within the Giants organization, and, you know, you had all the legacy guys here for so many years, did you imagine that in a few years you'd be back as a GM of the club?
No, I don't think I ever. I mean, I kind of thought one day I wanted to be a general manager, and what a great opportunity if I could do it at home and work for the ownership group that's here, that has been here for so long. And, you know, it ended up happening, which was terrific.
Barkley, what made Michael Dick the right choice for your new head coach?
Well, I've been in the rinks watching Michael's teams for the last, 5 years. He's been coaching at different levels, and I'm able to watch the ability for all of his players to contribute. You know, everybody understands the systems. Everybody knows what they need to do to contribute. He plays a full bench. He's in tune with today's sort of generation. He's around those kids, and kids aren't any worse today than they were before, but they are different in the approach towards kids. And now when you get a young hockey player and you want to give them a drill to do, when I played, we'd just do it. We wouldn't ask why. Mm-hmm. Now the kids may ask why. Why am I doing this drill? And if you explain, well, it's to get you to shoot off your off foot when you're coming on your off wing. And they go, oh, okay, I get it. Then they buy in. And I think he really has that good buy-in with that young generation.
Yeah, those darn millennials always asking questions like that. But I apologize because I'm within that age group myself. Now, last year, obviously, a pretty good season for the Giants getting back into the playoffs. And even though they fell in 7 against Victoria, I wouldn't necessarily call that a disappointment. You got back into the postseason. Your young players played a critical role, probably none bigger than Bowen Byram. And he's draft eligible this year. And with your extensive background, like, what stands out really when you're watching Bowen Byram play at his age?
Well, I mean, just his ability to control the game with the puck. I mean, he's like a fourth forward out there jumping in and sort of contributing to offense. And that seems to be the trend the game's going in today. And if you watch a lot of the NHL teams, they're activating their D and they're jumping in. And, you know, he's really a unique kid in that sense, that he's got the vision and the ability to do that.
And Barkley, I mean, you've had success finding some talented players when you were with the Tri-City Americans. Two of the ones that stand out the most, of course, Michael Rasmussen, the Red Wings top 10 pick from last year, and of course, Brandon Carlo, who's been one of the best young defensemen on the Boston Bruins blue line. You know, what's the secret in trying to being able to identify players of that caliber in the draft?
Well, you know what? It's not an exact science. We're looking at kids when they're 14 years old, and it's difficult to project maybe what they may look like in the future, but I think you need to have a good scouting staff. The staff needs to be understanding and aware of the identity of your team, the direction the team's going, and specifically target have a criteria that they go after and watch, and everybody understands it all together on the same level. And I think once you do that, I think the players, it's a little bit easier to sort of pick and choose who you'd like to take in the draft.
We're talking to the GM of the Vancouver Giants, Barkley Parnetta, here on Sportsnet 650, the new home of the Giants. And when you look at how the game is trending, and of course, it's always a bit different at the pro level and where you're at in major junior, but the game is changing a little bit. So when you're looking at these guys now, and I know it's not an exact science, what sort of traits do you look at most apparently now to try to determine how, especially defensemen, could work in today's game?
Well, you know what's interesting? Obviously, skating is the number one criteria. If you can skate, you're going to have an opportunity to play. 5, 10 years ago, you know, size was a big factor, but in actual fact, in our scouting program, we don't even have a rating for size anymore. It's really about the ability to sort of be involved in the game, skating, creativity, compete and sort of the hockey sense.
Barkley, that's pretty, I guess, surprising and very progressive that you don't necessarily rate players based on size anymore. And that's, I mean, for Canucks fans who just saw Quinn Hughes, for example, get drafted seventh overall by the Vancouver Canucks, we know the game is trending towards more skill and more speed and talent just rising to the very top. That's a really interesting evaluation. And even though Bowen, for example, isn't the smallest player, a guy like on your team, like Milos Roman, who just got drafted, he's not exactly the biggest player. So how do you evaluate properly when it comes to that? Is it hockey IQ or hockey sense or hockey skill?
It is. It's inert ability and sort of some natural ability. A lot of these kids, they all work out. They all spend a lot of time off ice. So physically, often, the kids are very similar. It's really how they use their head and their attributes once they're on the ice to sort of establish themselves, find the open ice, you know, a little creativity in their game. We're seeing a lot of the minor hockey systems, the coaching has improved tremendously over the past sort of 5 to 10 years. And what we're seeing now are, I don't want to call them robotic system players, but you've got a lot of players that look like they understand the game, but they may not because they're only where the coaches told them to be and they understand that. So that's where the difficulty lies, is determining who's executing a system based on what the coaches taught them, who's executing the system but also has that creativity when it breaks down to capitalize.
I mean, some people have been saying that hockey players are simply overcoached these days and they don't have the freedom of creativity that we used to see in decades past. But when it comes to these young players and not necessarily judging or rating them based on size, how important is it still to make sure that these kids, they're still growing and developing? They're in their teen years, so obviously there's still room for them to grow a few inches or put on a little bit more weight. And yet you need to add that strength to win the puck battles and make sure you're not easy to just knock off the puck.
No, that strength is a huge part. That sort of core strength, the body strength, is a really big factor. And, you know, it's interesting because we are talking about kids here. This is a junior hockey league. We're not talking about professional athletes. Mm-hmm. However, these guys are now training, and the facilities they train in are like professional athletes. These kids are playing hockey 24/7. It's probably too much. I'm certainly on the mindset that I don't mind if a kid's playing baseball in the summer or lacrosse. I don't mind that as long as they focus and get back into the hockey, you know, soon enough to be able to sort of come into camp and look good. But, you know, there's so many different aspects to the training now, mental training, fitness, nutrition. If you saw what these 14-year-old kids sit through in seminars and the access to information they have today, it's incredible. I mean, some of these kids are just machines.
Well, you know, that's the fascinating part as well that you mentioned playing other sports, because some of the best athletes you see in today's world, regardless of what sports they play, they always mention how much playing other sports helps them out, because you can translate certain skills from baseball, football to hockey as well. Maybe not every single thing, but there are certain parts that make you more dynamic as an athlete, right?
Oh, 100%. You know, anytime you're playing at a high level and it's athletic, I think it's good benefits a player, the creativity, the fun. That's the other thing. You have to have fun at the game. Like, if you're not having fun, you probably shouldn't be doing it. And if you're not having fun, you're not going to develop. And if you're not having, like, as much as that sounds like a cliche, you know, it's important to be enjoying what you're doing as well, because it is becoming, you know, a consuming sort of thing to become a hockey player.
Well, you're right. It's about the passion, right, Barkley? Because if you don't have that passion, how are you going to put in the extra work that needs to be put in after you're done your shift? Because you're not going to have success in today's professional world unless you put in that extra bit of work, because just doing the 9-to-5 doesn't get it done anymore.
No, and it's funny because the top kids, you can kind of see when you're around the kids, the ones that are sort of those elite kids that excel and end up playing in the NHL, they sort of have a mindset about them. But then there's another group of kids that are sort of in between where they could go either way, and I can't drive a kid to the gym and tell him you got to work out. I can't wake a kid up in the morning and tell him that this is what you got to eat this morning, and you got to eat 5-6 times a day, different meals. They've got to figure that out themselves, and sometimes it clicks, and sometimes it doesn't.
Barkley, Sat and I, we were just having a chat about leadership within the locker room and how that usually has to start with your best player buying into the coach's message and then all the other players sort of following suit in example. Assuming the captaincy is vacant for the Giants because Tyler Benson might be making that jump to pro hockey, do you have a particular player in mind who might be able to seize up that role in a very natural manner?
Well, no, because you know what? We've got a new staff here, so I think we're going to have to sort of go through the process of letting the coaching staff be around the players, letting me be around the players, and sort of make that have that discussion when it's time to sort of name a guy and see who the leaders are in the room.
He is the GM of the Vancouver Giants, Barkley Parnetta. Thanks so much for giving us some time on the new home of the Giants, Sportsnet 650. And best of luck, and I'm sure we'll be talking again very soon.
Well, it's good to be home, Satin John.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks so much. It's nice to be home. That's good. And we're excited to have the Vancouver Giants as part of our roster now. The true home of hockey in Vancouver is Sportsnet 650. And what a great interview that was.
Yeah.
I really, really like what he had to say about a number of different things. You know, obviously, and it sort of echoes some of the stuff we talked about earlier this week. And, you know, you brought up the fact about how we talked about how your best players have to be the guys who lead by example. People follow your best players, not your coach, not your fourth liners. It's your best players that lead the way. And the other part about this, too, is, you know, you have to put that work in. You have to have that passion. And fun is a offshoot of that, right? Like, you want to have fun, but you have fun doing something you're passionate about, even when it's hard, even when it's too much, even when you're sitting at home saying, do I really want to go and shoot 100 pucks into my backyard? Yeah, you do, because you love this, and that's what it's going to take.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I used to grow up in the suburbs, and I had a few friends who were drafted by WHL teams or were on track to get to that point. And I know in the summer it was the hardest thing for them because, you know, you just want to be a kid at that age and just go and have fun and go and be stupid and do whatever, have nights out. But you know you're committed to something here. And these guys would often say with a sulky face at the time, like, I'm sorry, guys, I can't. I got to go and do practice. I got to go wake up early because I got to go to the rink. But in the end, you're doing something that you love, and you know you're putting the time into a long-term investment to your career.
And if you love something that much, it doesn't seem like hard work. It is. You know you're putting the work in, but you're so passionate about it that you're just eager to go do it, right? You don't look at it as, oh, now I got to go do this. Now I got to go do that. Because every once in a while, no matter how passionate you are, there are going to be moments where you're just exhausted and you want some time.
You're like, you're dragging your feet a little bit.
Sometimes that happens, of course. That's just human nature. But if you don't have that inner drive, because it's fun, because it's riveting for you, because it's driving you, it's hard. You like Barkley said, you can't go and wake up a kid at 5 a.m. and make him go work out. You can't go and nitpick a kid and make him eat healthy. You're either buy into it or you don't. You give the message, you try to reinforce it as many times as you can, but you can't hold people's hands. Mm-hmm. Not forever. At some point, you have to take over. And the other aspect, playing different sports. He's a GM of the Giants, and he's saying, I don't mind if my players go away in the summer and spend a few weeks playing another sport. Amar on Twitter chimes in and he says, playing spring soccer helped my kid with his vision and creativity, passing, keeping the ball, or the puck. And these are all translatable skills. Henrik and Daniel Sedin essentially played soccer on ice. Would Henrik and Daniel be as dynamic playing the way they did if they weren't two fabulous soccer players growing up? Henrik could have played for the national
team. He should go play for the Whitecaps, quite frankly.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't put it past the guy.
Yeah. Brought in some DPs of Swedish descent.
These things help, right? Yeah. Like, there are ways you can translate skills from one sport to another. And I think if you are a bit of a visionary as a GM, you encourage that. Mm-hmm. Anytime I hear a coach or a GM or an organization, especially the younger organizations, about kids that are trying to develop into NHL players or whatever, they're saying, no, only focus on hockey. To me, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. To me, I don't think you create a well-rounded athlete.
What about the fact that Barkley just admitted to us that in his scouting evaluation, he no longer has any ranking or style to judge player size?
Isn't that brilliant? No, it's
Welcome to the new age.
I'm not being facetious.
No, I get it.
It's the reality now. I mean, we spent so much time talking about this, too, over the Quinn Hughes draft. Jim Benning, we asked him, what's the most important? I asked Jim, point blank, in Dallas, what is the number one trait that matters most for defensemen today? He said skating. Mm-hmm. Skating.
Yes.
Size was nowhere near the top five.
And then number two, back skating.
Well, yeah. Skating, puck skills, how you see the game. These are the things that matter more than anything else.
Right.
Yeah, and it's just stunning to hear that. And more so how quickly it has happened, because he said in a timeline of five years ago, maybe size was the most important thing. And here we are. Like, the evolution of a sport is at a blink. Mm-hmm. Right now in hockey. And I don't know if it's going to continue that way, because we may have found the trait that is most valuable now, whereas this might be it. Like, now we've perfected the development process, whereas if you're not focusing on skating, because everything has to rely on that, that's what it's going to come down to. Maybe it's hockey sense, but that's part of just an old person's mental makeup of how they can process, how they can understand.
Can you develop hockey sense?
And that might be the next step. But right now, I think from a physical standpoint, all the focus is on skating.
Mm-hmm. It is. And one point that Alex Auld made during the draft, which I thought was a really good one too, was right now, size doesn't matter as much because skating is the most important aspect, just like you mentioned, Bick. But what happens when those big guys realize you have to work on your skating and they become the fastest guys on the ice? Right. Then it'll shift again because you're looking at skating. It's like, well, if a guy's a great skater and he's 6'5", we'll take in the guy who's 6'5". Right? But right now, it's hard to find a lot of guys with that size and they're that good at skating and also have the hockey sense. And can you develop hockey sense? That's always a big question, right? Because you either get it or you don't. But you know what helps hockey sense? Playing other sports. Because if you're playing soccer a lot and you have your head up at all times and you're looking at making things happen and you're used to having your head up at all times, when you're playing hockey, you're going to be more comfortable keeping your head up, reading the play
skills
a little bit differently, seeing little things you may have not seen playing other sports. These things help you out.
The passing windows and the movement channels in soccer.
Yeah, reading plays, being a step ahead.
Very relatable. And hockey is a little bit faster. Actually, I should say quite a bit faster than soccer because those skating windows are, and we've seen it especially on like breakouts, whether you're working out of the corner, where to maneuver and where to see someone else is maneuvering to, it's you blink and you miss it. And you got to play other sports. You got to learn different skills and it'll help you so much faster. And I'm curious if there's any, because I know in football there's a lot of VR technology happening. I'm curious if anything like that is coming down the pipe in hockey.
Well, there's been that skate tracking they're working on. It hasn't been perfected yet. Some teams have proprietary information they use that hasn't been made public, so I'm sure there's something out there we haven't heard about. But it seems like the NHL, compared to the other sports, has been a bit slower in embracing those technologies.
Well, it's
at least in the, for public consumption.
It's really new and raw technology right now as it is. It's only getting groundbreaking stuff on the consumer level. So I imagine in a few more years, it'll naturally be adopted into how teams evaluate and draft players. So this is going to be a very fascinating. We live in a very brilliant time in human history, in sport history.
Yeah, it's fun watching the shift in how players are being evaluated and what's being deemed success in the NHL today compared to what it used to be a few years back. We're going to be talking to Brock Besser in a few moments. Him and Keith Ballard, former Vancouver Canuck, currently the coach of Brock Besser at the Beauty League. He's played a couple of games. Two hat tricks already for Brock Besser. I think he looks okay. I think he's all right. He's all right.
Yeah, I think he's doing pretty well.
He's okay. I think he'll be fine. And what I thought was actually really eye-opening, he had a conversation that they posted on Canucks.com, and he talked about his back injury and how scary it was in the moment. Like, he's the amount of pain he was in and how frightened he was about the seriousness of that injury, it's pretty scary stuff. Because in the moment, you don't quite know what's happening from the outside perspective. We knew that it was serious because he got stretchered off and he had to spend the night in the hospital. But when you hear him talk about it, it was pretty chilling.
Yeah, absolutely. He sort of remembered the moment where he was in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. And of course, you know, he hit the ambulance hit a few speed bumps or whatever it was. But just those bumps on the road caused him so much pain. He remembers that vividly. That's just an example of the kind of thing that he had to go through and how much better off he is for it and how fortunate he feels that it wasn't worse.
But the good thing is he's feeling healthy. He's scoring goals in the Beauty League and thinks not only is he going to be ready for camp, he feels like he's going to be ready for camp and be even better than he's been. So we'll talk about that and more right here on the home of the Vancouver Canucks and the new home of the Vancouver Giants. Woo. Sportsnet 650.
It's the Playbook with Satyar Shah and John Jang on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
It is Throwback Thursday here on Sportsnet 650. Brock Besser is too young to be a throwback player, but the way he fires that wrist shot, he may as well be a throwback superstar. Lighting the lamp in the Beauty League, two games, two hat tricks, not bad coming off his injury at the end of the season. Looks like he's going to be ready to go for camp even better than he was before, John. And I think we're all excited to see Brock Besser in camp with a few other talented Canucks youngsters like Elias Pettersson this year.
Absolutely, and maybe it's going to be Quinn Hughes also joining in on that team. I'm sure we'll find out at some point throughout the next few days, going into next week maybe. But Brock Besser, of course, 29 goals, and he had a share of the team lead in scoring right there with Daniel. The guy did just about everything. And if he had stayed healthy, which of course is the big knock, he absolutely, in my books, would have won the Calder race.
Would have been a lot closer to winning. It was still one of the nominees, was all down in Vegas for the awards ceremony.
All-star MVP.
Yeah, not bad. Not too shabby for rookie season. And we have Keith Ballard, who is his head coach at the Beauty League, and Brock Besser on the line right now. And Brock, Keith, thanks for joining us on Sportsnet 650. How are you doing today, Brock?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing well. And Keith, thanks for joining us as well. And are you staying out of trouble recently or no? we're just having an issue with Keith. But Brock, before we get your coach on the line, how much barking does Keith Ballard do behind the bench?
a little bit of barking, but it's not too bad. He might throw a couple chirps here and there, but it's all fun, and it's fun to have him be on the bench.
And Keith, thanks for joining us on Sportsnet 650. So, I mean, you're legendary for your chirping and your jokes. So, what do you say to these players on the bench when you try to get them motivated?
You know what? There's not a lot. I had to get on Brock the first night to shoot more. He was trying to get a little fancy. He was in summer hockey mode, which it is summer, so I don't blame him, but it feels a lot better to win at the end of the night than it does to lose. So he's got a decent shot, so I want him to shoot.
Yeah, I think that shot has been okay. I mean, we're not completely impressed with the shot. It's okay.
You can work on it, but it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, how many shots did he take that game when he scored three, Keith?
I think four.
Right. 75%, that's okay.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. 75% all season would be great.
Keith, I mean, what is it like for you these days? You're back home in Minnesota. You're a few years away from the NHL, and yet you're having fun coaching there with the Beauty League. You must be enjoying a little bit of life right now, as is, right?
You know what? I am. I'm helping my wife chase three kids around, able to be at a lot of their activities, a lot of their stuff, and just able to just be in the community a little bit more, reach out to a few different areas, and keep myself busy. So I'm having a great time. I'm really enjoying this.
And Brock, of course, Minnesota being home for you, you're right back there with your family. You're having fun at the Beauty League. And let's just get it clear and in the air. You're pretty much 100%, right?
Yeah, for sure. I just saw the Vancouver doctors about 2 weeks ago again, and they gave me the green light. So I've been going full tilt here the past week and a half. So it's been good, and it feels really good to be back.
Pretty curious, because Sven Berchi got married over the weekend, if I'm not mistaken. I'm wondering if you got an invite, because he was on this radio station a couple of weeks ago, and he said Travis Green did not make the cut. I'm wondering if you did.
Yeah, I made the cut. Well, at the end of the year, when we're all here together, a few of us guys, I was a little on about getting an invite. So I was on him about getting an invite, but unfortunately I couldn't make it. So I feel kind of bad that I didn't get out there, but I definitely made the cut.
And Brock, you mentioned you feel 100%. Just for your confidence, how did it feel getting on that ice the first game, scoring a couple of goals? Like, did that just mentally help you pass a hurdle?
Yeah. I didn't know how I was going to be when I got back, and how my wrist shot or my wrist was going to affect me when I was shooting the puck. And to get a couple of those goals where I was shooting the puck, I think it gave me some confidence. But again, I think I still got a lot of stuff to work on the rest of the summer, so I need to make sure I keep attacking that.
And Keith, I mean, you had a long, successful career in the National Hockey League, of course, and you went through your injuries as well. So when you see a young guy go through a pretty serious injury the way Brock did, I mean, what kind of advice would you impart on a young guy like that to try to get back from an injury like that?
Well, I think he's covered it. I mean, just doing all the rehab, making sure you're on top of it and even ahead of it, he's done, and it's shown just watching him on the ice the last couple weeks. And that's the big part of it. You know, at this stage right now, that's your job. That's what you need to do, and that's got to be your focus, whether, it's the rehab, the extra training, whatever you're doing. It's just making sure you're going to be ready to go on schedule or ahead of schedule, and he's done a great job of that.
And if you were playing against Brock Besser in today's NHL, how would you go about defending that shot?
I'd change right away. Let somebody else do it.
Somebody else's problem.
Well, the release is outstanding. There are certain guys that have the ability to understand how to get open and where to be and when to be there, and Brock has that. And that's a special quality that I think I taught him last week. So I'm going to take a little credit. But no, there's guys that have that, and Brock has that, which is special.
We're going to try and get a petition going for you to get considered for the Jack Adams, assuming Brock does have a very successful second campaign here, Keith. But I'm curious with you, Keith. You're having fun, of course, coaching in the Beauty League, but is this something that you'd like to take a couple steps further along, maybe coach at a professional level at some point?
You know what? I have a lot of respect for coaches with how much time there is into it and the work that they put into it. I love the idea of coaching.
Mm-hmm.
But right now my coaching focus is going to be this fall on my kids' might teams. And that's kind of the extent for me. I love coaching the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I coach a fall summer high school league, and for this summer for the Beauty League. That's good for me.
the time constraints away from your family and what you do. I mean, like I said, I love the idea of coaching, but when you look at all it entails, coaches are special people, no matter what level they're at. Mm-hmm. They're volunteering their time. Not many of them get paid for it. So it's when you have good coaches, you have to appreciate them.
You know what? One step at a time, I think, is the right way to go about things. And Brock, you know, I hate to bring up the business side of the game, but you are entering the final year of your ELC. And a lot of Canucks fans wondering, is that something you'd like to take care of sooner rather than later? Or would you prefer just waiting and see how the season plays out for you first?
Yeah, I'm definitely not in any rush. Like you said, there's a year left on my contract. So, you know, I'm more worried about focusing on my game and coming back and trying to have a better year than I did last year. And fix some parts of my game up. So, you know, that's something that will be dealt with when, you know, if they bring it up and talk about it. But, you know, I'm not too worried about it.
We're talking to Brock Besser and Keith Ballard here on Sportsnet 650. And, you know, Brock, you had a really successful rookie season, and it's always difficult coming back for your sophomore year. You know, just talking to people around the Beauty League, because there's a lot of NHL players who have a lot of talent there. Have you been picking people's brains about how to always be one step ahead of the players? Because it's always about adjusting and adding a little extra to your game as you move forward.
Yeah. You know, just with some of the guys I worked out with, just, you know, already training and just talking to them. I mean, I know that the league's not going to get any easier, and it's only going to get harder as, you know, you continue to play in the league. So, I mean, you know, I think I kind of learned that a little bit last year as the season went on. It got harder and harder. So, you know, that's why some of us are thankful for that. Going through in the summer with, knowing that you need to come back better than you were the year before.
And Keith, I mean, you played in Vancouver in 2011 during that magical run, and you've been here too when things didn't go as well. I mean, what sort of advice would you have for Brock when things are going well? This market is fantastic. Everything is beautiful. Everything is fine. But when things don't go right, especially after you spend a couple of years here, things can get a bit more dicey, or at least there's more attention and criticism. How would you tell a young guy to do that?
There is, but I think, you know, I mentioned this the other day. I was talking to someone, you know, another station in Vancouver, and the Brock's ability to just understand himself as a player and his belief in himself is outstanding. And, you know, I learned that from guys there who have been in the market, you know, a guy like Kevin Bieksa or the Sedin, those guys who have been through the highs and lows, they know what they do when they're successful. They understand their game, and a lot of this stuff doesn't bother them. And that's what makes you good in a big market. A lot of people can hide in certain markets and, you know, not feel the heat when it's not going well. But the guys that have that ability to just move on and understand and be confident and comfortable with who they are as a player, those are guys that succeed, and that's what I see with Brock.
That's one of the things we've noticed about Brock, too. And for Brock, I mean, you know, I'm sure you're excited about some of the young guys coming in. Pedersen this year is looking like he's going to make the team. If Quinn Hughes signs, he might be there in training camp. When we start looking at some of the young players on this roster or are budging to make this team in a year or two, how excited does that make you, Brock?
Yeah, no, it's, you know, it is exciting. You know, obviously, to get to play with the Sedins for their final year, and then now it's taking that transition to the younger core group of guys. It's fun to see, and you know, I'm definitely excited to see what Pedersen brings to training camp and how he does. And then, you know, obviously, with Quinn Hughes, if he signs, seeing some video on him, it just looks like he's a tremendous skater and, you know, really skilled and can move the puck well. So, you know, it's exciting, and it's definitely going to be a process.
Chatting with Brock Besser and Keith Ballard here on the Playbook Sportsnet 650. And Brock, a lot of people are, of course, naturally excited about Quinn Hughes and what he could do for the Canucks. But you're a player who did spend two seasons at North Dakota. Can you quickly explain how that second season there at the NCAA really benefited you in getting more prepared for the NHL?
Yeah, you know, it did definitely benefit me a lot, not just from the on-ice aspect, but on the off-ice. I think I really got a lot stronger in my second year. You know, I had to learn some stuff on ice, playing in games where, you know, guys would tee on you more often than not and, you know, try to rattle you or whatever. So, you know, I think that kind of helped me develop as a player too. And, you know, I battled through some injuries my second season, so I kind of had to go through that. But, you know, I think it just made me more of a player on and both off the ice.
Still over a point per game in that second year while you were dealing with that wrist injury, which, by the way, of course, looks pretty darn good nowadays. But, Keith, for you, also a similar mobile defenseman back in your playing days, do you remember your first season and some of the challenges that might have really caught you off guard when it came to getting ready for the NHL? And you also spent, I believe it was 3 years at college hockey before making the jump to the pros.
I did, yeah. I think the biggest thing was the daily grind. It's easy to be excited early. You're running on adrenaline for a long time in the season, and eventually that hits you. So that's where I think for a young player that being able to withstand, you know, you get past the 40-50 game mark, and now you've still got 30-40 games left. That's the hard part. And being able to do that, and once you get used to that, the league is a lot easier.
And before we let you guys
go. Hey, guys, sorry, yeah. I don't want to cut you off. I'm at a charity golf tournament, and it's pouring. They just told us to get to our cart.
All right. So, it's all good.
I'm going to leave you two with Brock. I'm really sorry.
No worries. Sounds good,
Keith. Either that or my phone goes goes haywire getting poured on.
It's all good. Thanks.
I'm really sorry.
It's all good.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for joining us, Keith. And before we let you go, Brock, and I know you got to get to your training as well, but you know, one of the real special things that we notice about you is how close you are with your family. And of course, we remember in your first NHL game when Willie Desjardins had your father Duke come out, read the lineup and announce it, everything. And your father Duke was behind the bench with Keith Ballard too at the Beauty League. How special is it for you that you have your dad here every step along the way?
Oh yeah, it's awesome. You know, my family is extremely supportive of me, and I wouldn't be where I am today without them. So, you know, it's fun to see when he's behind the bench every game. He might even be a better coach than Keith, honestly. So it's it's fun to come back to the bench and hear what he has to say to me, because he hasn't coached me for a while. So that's fun. And then my sister's running around the rink too, and then my mom's usually watching the stands. So. You know, it's fun to see him there.
Yeah, it's awesome. And Brock, listen, we're all happy that you're doing well and feeling healthy, and we look forward to seeing you here in training camp. Keep lighting the lamp in the Beauty League and enjoy your family, and you'll be back in Vancouver talking to us idiots again very soon.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Take care,
right,
Brock.
Thank you. That is Brock Besser with Keith Ballard. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun.
Keith had to leave a little bit early.
I think that's the first time someone's ever been like, yo, I'm out.
I'm out. I can't handle you two anymore.
During one of our interviews.
Was that an excuse? I mean, I did hear some commotion in the background, yeah. But was that just him, like, you know, fudging the phone? He'd be like, I got to get off the line with these guys.
Yeah,
I
basically.
Can't do this anymore.
Yeah, they're just like, asking me about my rookie season.
like,
I'm out of here. Screw this Jane guy.
Yeah. And the biggest takeaway, of course, is Brock Besser's doing well. He's feeling healthy 100%. He feels 100% mm-hmm. fully healthy. The wrist is good. The back is good. He feels like he's going to be even better for training camp. And he understands. And talking to players who are in the Beauty League as well, and there are a lot of NHL players in this league. And it is essentially a glorified, you know, beer league with NHL players. And there are other guys who aren't NHL caliber, but they are very talented hockey players. So it's not the worst level of competition for summer shinny, essentially.
No, it's not.
So he's had a chance to talk to quite a few NHL players. And, you know, he is thinking ahead about how do I get one step ahead next year? Because the league is going to adjust to him. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to figure out a way to still be able to produce.
Exactly. I mean, we know Henrik and Daniel aren't there to take away some of the defensive zone draws for other teams. So now it's all entirely on Brock, on Bo, and whomever rides on that left wing, whether it's Sven Berchi or insert player here. Now they have more tape on Brock. They know his tendencies on where he likes to shoot, how he likes to shoot. A lot of his wristers, I noticed over the past year, he likes to shoot the puck right between the defender's legs. And I'm sure goaltenders now can expect that moving forward. But
he
at some point,
the angle on the shot,
he
a
does.
Lot, right?
At some point, though, when you're one on one like he was against Carey Price earlier this season, like just a few feet in front of Carey Price, there's not much you can do except try and just make yourself big in the net and hope that Besser's wrister isn't just burning you clean.
I mean, speaking of the Beauty League, there aren't many beauties better than Keith Ballard. And that,
right.
I mean, and like Vikingstad points out on Twitter, love Ballard's answer to how he would defend against Brock.
Change as quickly as I can.
Get off the ice. I'm off the ice. I'm not going to defend this kid.
That's good. That's good.
No, and, you know, Keith, he's one of those guys as well that even though 2011 and his stay in Vancouver didn't go the way he wanted to, he loved playing in the city. And mm-hmm. as he mentioned, it's when you're playing on a team that has having that much success and is that good and the expectations are high and the market's fully invested, it's a special place to play. And even when there is pressure on you, there's pressure on you because people care, because people are this passionate about this team. Sometimes it can cross the line, whether it's media, whether it's the fans, that's true. But realistically speaking, it's the gift and the curse, and it comes both ways.
Yep.
And if you want to be in a market where everything is amazing when you're winning and it's the best place in the world to play, essentially, Well, there's going to be some bad on the other end of it. But when you are on that high, there aren't many places that are better.
It's the classic double-edged sword, isn't it? Where you become the hero and you can quickly become the zero at all. It's all about how the team performs out there. But Keith Ballard, sure, he didn't have a lot of points as a Vancouver Canuck, despite the fact that entering that trade, you know, he was a guy who put up 28 points in the Panthers in his last season. It all kind of dried up when he got to Vancouver. But he was a mobile, smooth skating defenseman throughout the bulk of his career.
But he was also super physical. Like, he was a small, like, he was
those
a small
checks,
defenseman,
yeah.
Hip checks, and he would fight. Like, yeah. When he was playing for the Phoenix, this was the Phoenix Coyotes.
That's
before
right.
It changed
That's
to
right.
Arizona. And this guy would drop the gloves, and he'd be fighting guys left, right, and center. And he had that hip injury when he came to Vancouver and got off on the wrong foot. Obviously, we know that Alain Vigneault never trusted him. The game's changed quite a bit from mm-hmm. when Keith Ballard came into the National Hockey League, but there are some similarities in how great of a skater he was initially. He wasn't the same skater, though, after mm-hmm. those injuries, right? And when he lost a little bit of that quickness, you notice he wasn't the same guy and didn't fit in with Alain Vigneault. But, you know, it's still comparable as in terms of being a more undersized defenseman. But Quinn Hughes is going to be quite a bit different. And you heard Brock mention how excited he is about the young guys on this team and what they could build together over the next few years if this team keeps adding more quality young players. And, you know, our 650-650 text message inbox has a few responses already. And Kyle from Trail says, meh, Brock Besser looks okay. Okay, freaking amazing. and I like this one about, we talked about how you have to be ahead of the curve, and you know, what can Brock Besser do over this offseason mm-hmm. to still catch people off guard next year, or at least still have as much success? And he mentions, and this text message says, subtle changes to blade angle mid-shot make Brock Besser very hard to defend. And it is true. Mm-hmm. The way he changes the angles and the way he shoots is really hard to defend. So teams have to figure out, how do we take his time and space away? And that's where, you know, you have to be able to find those open gaps still. I like Brock a lot, and I know there is some worry that his shooting percentage was a bit high, and he rode some percentages last year. But just look at that kid play, how smart he is, how he finds the open areas, how he thinks the game, and how good that shot is. Yeah, maybe he won't score 40 goals next year.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he will.
But I am not at all concerned that Brock Besser isn't, quote-unquote, the real deal.
We do know the sophomore slump is a thing, and that's because...
For some
yeah,
players,
teams do get more video on you, and they know exactly what your tendencies can be. But, you know, Matt Murray, and calling out Brock as being the luckiest player in the league in the sense that, you know, some of those passes just ended up on his stick, on the tape, or whatever, it takes a certain skill to know where to be. And even if Brock was fortunate enough that a couple of puck bounces went and landed on his stick, it's the fact that he was in the position to receive those lucky bounces that should tell you enough about Brock's high hockey IQ. And we were having that conversation just a little bit ago here on the playbook about, can you teach hockey sense? I don't know if you necessarily can, but Brock has that naturally built into his to the way he reads plays, to the where he knows where he needs to go for the puck to just luckily and fortunately bounce up on a stick.
One of the things he does, and with deceptive shooting, is, have you noticed sometimes where he's skating away from the play and then shoots it, where he's kind of from the sideboards? He finds ways to mm-hmm. get shots on goal unexpectedly big.
Now, I know when I say this name, I'm not
putting
him in the same category, but when you have a unique trait like that shot, and like an Alex Ovechkin, who's also scored a ton of goals, and his shooting percentage in an odd season here or there has dipped, but generally speaking, it's been very consistent around that 13%, 12%, and Brock's, I don't know, was at 16%. But when you have that skill, I feel like you might be able to sustain it because you find opportunities like in the spot on the power mm-hmm. play. He knows how to get open, and if you're consistently bombing shots down and consistently doing it, you should be able to have a fairly successful season.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the best players do have above league average shooting percentages.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm not as worried about it. Sure, maybe he won't be as high, it goes down a tick or two, but I wouldn't put it past Brock Besser to easily score 30 goals next season. Like, I don't see it being a problem for this
kid.
Well,
assuming he stays healthy, he was on pace to have more than that
yeah,
this year.
Well, exactly. So, I mean, he may not be on the same pace he was this year, but if he gets, say, 30, 31 over 82 games, that's pretty darn good.
Exactly. And what might help him out, though, is the fact that he might have a guy like Elias Pettersson helping him out. And we know what Pettersson has been doing professionally in Sweden this past year. So on paper, it looks like the translatable skills are there to at least help one another on the power play.
And one of the aspects of Brock's game, which I don't think gets enough credit, and it's there's for good reason. We're so mesmerized by his shot because it is one of the best releases in the National Hockey League. But he's a really smart player and he's a good playmaker. How many times did we sit here and talk about last year? But man, he sees the ice. Yeah. He sees the game unfold. He makes these really subtle, smart plays all the time. He's a playmaker too. Mm-hmm. He's just a good hockey player.
Remember that one game in December where him, Vanek, and Gagne were playing together and they tore up the Blackhawks? I think they had a combined 12 points against the Blackhawks alone between the three of them. Brock had, what, 3 or 4 assists that night. And that should tell you alone that when he sees a chance to make a better play and it's not a shot, he'll dish the puck out. It's all about being in the right position for him as a playmaker for you to receive that particular pass.
Viking Stat on Twitter is on fire today. This is a good question. Whose shooting percentage drops more next year? Brock or William Karlsson?
Right.
Karlsson seems to be the natural pick here.
I would say so.
Yeah, 26% it was?
I don't think it was 26 by the end of the year, but it was high. It was high. I think, let me bring it up exactly. It was in the 20 range for sure.
I want to say 26.
No, it was 23.4.
Nah.
It was 23.4%. That is coming down. I don't care how good
what
William
Karlsson
is. Yeah. No, his shooting percentage is coming down for sure. Like 100% is coming down. Here's the beautiful part of William Karlsson. If his shooting percentage comes down 5%, it's still unsustainably
high. Right. And if it even goes down half, he's still up in the upper echelon of the league.
And here's the thing. He also did it on not that many shots. Mm-hmm. Like, he took 184. Brock took 179.
Yeah.
Like, he could also stand to shoot more.
And there's also 62 games, 20 games less. But Brock shot 16%. If that comes down to earth, so to speak, it'll be 13% or so, 12%. So I'm still expecting Brock Besser to have a good season next year.
And having more confidence, like you said, getting a goal, knowing his wrist is better. You would hope, and using his smarts, you would hope he gets more space, finds more space, and starts shooting more, because that's something you like, that overall attempts to tick over 6.5, closer to 7.
Yeah, one thing you notice about Alex Ovechkin, too, he shoots the puck a wild amount.
Nine times a game.
Yeah, exactly. So he tries to fire the puck at every single turn, and the more Brock Besser shoots the puck, and Keith Ballard mentioned, hey, we just need you to shoot the puck. We know you're a good playmaker, but your shot is what's going to help us win games.
Just be the rifle.
Yeah, and no question about it. Here is a text message from Dan before we get out of here, our friend Dan in Abbotsford, to our 650-650 Sportsnet text message inbox. Honestly, it may not be the worst thing for Brock to only score 25 to 30 goals next year. In a perfect world, you lock him up long-term on a more team-friendly deal after a lower goal-per-game pace than have him burst on to being a perennial 40-goal scorer from there on out. I'd still like to see 30. I think if you see 30, that gives you the confidence and faith that he's going to be able to just do this on a consistent basis. But yeah, if he gets 30, it's probably better than 40 as far as the Canucks are concerned when it comes to signing a new long-term contract.
But here's the beauty. If he scores 40 or 50 or 60 or 80 or whatever, you're more than happy to pay out because you know what you're getting out of that.
Yeah, but it is fascinating. He mentioned about the contract. He's not too worried about it, nor should he be. I think he has the utmost confidence in himself, and if he does come in and have an even better season, he'll get paid even more. So I'm not sure he's too concerned about his contract situation with the Vancouver Canucks. We'll talk more hockey on the other side as well. We saw a big trade in the NBA yesterday. So how many?
It was pretty big.
It was a star-for-star trade. You don't oftentimes see two star players in their primes getting traded for another. So what are some other trades in sport history, including the National Hockey League, that were significant star-for-star trades, and which ones worked out for teams? We'll get into that and more right here on Sportsnet 650.
This is The Playbook with Satyar Shah and John Chang. United by sport, we are Sportsnet 650.
Throwback Thursday, hashtag TBT. Some 50 Cent. I guess this is throwback now. How old is this song, Bick? What, 15 years?
15 years?
Or yeah, it's
something
be,
like that.
I want to say 04.
Like, are we talking Get Rich or Die Trying?
No, this is The Game.
This is The Game.
And 50 Cent.
Yeah. Probably 04, 05.
I think it's a little bit later. I don't think it was 03, because that would be 15 years.
So, but somewhere around there.
Hey, hold up. Here we go.
03 was like Get Rich or Die Trying.
05.
05. Huh? So yeah. 13 years.
Yeah, all right.
13 years.
Yeah, 03.
It's old. So that is pretty close. Dang. We had a fun chat with Brock Besser and Keith Ballard a few minutes ago. And, you know, our motto on this show is hashtag facts only. Mm-hmm. And we had a text message from Dan, and I thought it was Dan in Abbotsford. It was actually Dan in Brentwood. So mea culpa, Dan in Brentwood, our guy as well. And
how can you make that mistake, Sat? Because they both
have 2-5-0.
Do all Dans look alike to you? Dan Riccio doesn't live in Brentwood?
look alike? I didn't see anybody's face. I'm looking at text messages.
I know. I'm being facetious here,
The numbers are actually pretty similar, too. 250 area codes.
Oh,
both of them.
You can't share that information on the on the radio?
Area codes, you can. I didn't share the entire number, John.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
You are jumping the shark.
I am on my second coffee right now, thanks to one of our colleagues at News 1130, Sonia. So I am just all wired up right now. So I apologize. You've got another like 2.5 hours of this.
My goodness. Vic's like, what just happened? He is terrified of what you just said.
Yeah. I'm on my second coffee, right? So I'm all amped up. 2.5 more hours of this, Vic. He's just shaking his head. He's like, no.
Too much.
Too much.
Even Kyle is like, dude, this is the game featuring 50 Cent on our 650-650
hashtag
text message inbox.
Yeah.
Well, I said the game.
No, I know.
Y'all remember that time the game was in town?
I wasn't going to throw you in the bus. Kyle was.
The game was wearing that the Canucks jersey?
Well, I mean, when they come to concerts, they all wear Canucks jerseys. I remember the
not all of them.
I remember the Up and Smoke tour, which was back in 2000, and I saw somebody post a ticket from that concert. I went to that concert.
Oh,
back in 2000, it was with Dr. Dre, Eminem,
like 33 of them.
Snoop Dogg was there, and if I recall correctly, I think Snoop Dogg came out on a Canucks jersey back then too.
That's pretty good.
I think.
That's pretty good. And nothing will beat, when it comes to Snoop Dogg and hockey conversation, his performance at the All-Star Game in Anaheim. Or, sorry, pardon me, Los Angeles. That was just the thing of legends.
Well, I mean, when you have Snoop Dogg being the DJ and he doesn't do edits,
things and all the player intros while Snoop Dogg's just dancing in the middle of the ice. Oh.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great?
Highlight reel moment
wouldn't
for the
NHL. Wouldn't it be
NHL.
Great? Wouldn't it be great? And, you know, we were talking to Brock and Keith, and it was a really fun conversation. If you missed it, we'll play it back coming up at noon, because it's worth a listen for Canucks fans. And if you just want to hear a fun chat with an NHL player and also a former NHL player, it is pretty awesome. So we'll play some of that back and have fun with it, too. Yesterday, we saw a big trade in the NBA. Mm-hmm. It was one of those odd, rare trades, star player for star player. They're both in their primes. Now, you can make the case that Kawhi Leonard is a true superstar, whereas DeMar DeRozan is a star, not quite at that level. But how often do we see star-for-star trades? And, you know, we got a couple text messages here, too. Zach and Langley makes a couple good points. He mentioned Subban for Weber, Lindros for Forsberg, Hall for Larson. I'm just joking about the Hart for Larson thing. But Subban for Weber, I think that's similar, because regardless of what you think of Weber at the time, there were star players, one for another. Forsberg for Lindros. Forsberg was still a prospect at that time.
You didn't know what you were getting at.
So he wasn't yet a star, but he was close. But that's similar to that as well.
And Hall for Larson. Sure, we make fun of at Adam Larson and the fact that he's not a top two defenseman, although he is in Edmonton. He was an established NHL defenseman when that trade went down. Was he a star? Not necessarily on the same level as Taylor Hall, but I found a couple of other examples. When we're talking about just a straight up one for one, star player for star player, Ryan Johansson and Seth Jones. That was pretty much a carbon copy of what we might have seen here in the NBA. And going back a few more years, Danny Heatley and Martin Havlat, when they swapped from Minnesota and San Jose. So I think that's a pretty comparable situation. Of course, both players are out of the league now, but that's just an example that these kind of trades, they don't happen in the world of sports. You have to go back several years, even sometimes a decade, to find an example of what happened yesterday.
Yeah, and if you look at other sports, in the NBA, it's happened a couple times, but not a lot. I mean, you're looking at Jason Kidd for Stephon Marbury, and there aren't many other ones. There aren't many other ones that are a lot bigger than that.
We were just talking Champ Bailey and Clinton Portis yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
There's one, and maybe he wasn't a star, but Alfonso Soriano got traded in the A-Rod deal.
But you mentioned, I think he was, he's somebody who was a 7-time All-Star.
So he was kind of like the DeMar DeRozan of the MLB.
Right. So that's pretty
good
similar.
Good enough, and maybe not a superstar, but like certainly helped Texas. He was a fine player. And yeah, it's rare to see these quote-unquote win-win deals in a way. San Antonio is not rebuilding, but like they're still going to try to make it work, and I'm sure they'll still get to 48 wins.
You start going through these deals, and you look at some of the other ones that happened in the NBA, and one that was Vin Baker for Sean Kemp, and it's like, yeah, that one didn't work out for any team when that happened. Usually there's one team that's on the bigger losing end than the other when you move a star for a star, at least in the NBA. So who's going to be on the losing end of the Kawhi Leonard, DeMar DeRozan trade? Will they both be winners, or will one team suffer more from the other? And the obvious one, I guess, is if Toronto can't keep Kawhi, yada, yada, yada.
So long as they got 1 year out of Kawhi, I still think it's A-OK.
One great year. Because you're right, as you will explain, and I know I'm going to dip into my crystal ball, and I'm going to, because you say they just freed themselves $30 million at DeMar DeRozan's cap for the next 3 years. And that is going to help them when it comes to the rebuild and the fact that they're going to have so much more money to try and sign young players that deserve it, like OG down the road, and bring in free agents.
And for 1 year, their ceiling just got a lot higher. They're more likely to make the finals today than they were yesterday. Is that fair?
That's fair.
So in that regard, it's absolutely worth it. And the idea for Castaways isn't to go out to sign the next big free agent, the next Anthony Davis. It's to take on contracts to get first-round picks.
Mm.
And if you want to keep a superstar, the easiest way to do it is have them for 7 years when you can draft them. Mm-hmm. If you draft the next Kawhi, then you can hang on to them. You need picks to do that. And if they're lucky, they end up in a lottery pick. And, mm-hmm. and you get some good luck, it becomes a top seven pick. So the reason you want them to have cap space is not just for free agency. It's mm-hmm. it's they're able to take on a bad contract and also a future first.
Carmelo Anthony, new Toronto Raptor.
No, thank you. I mean, I'm not even a Raptors fan, but I mean, that just doesn't seem like it would be prudent.
Kawhi
at
would
all.
Really want out there.
Yeah, exactly. You want to make sure that Kawhi doesn't stay in Toronto?
Bring
Carmelo Anthony along. I'm sure it'll work out great. We got this text message too. Alexa Yashin for young, unproven Chara and Spezza. They weren't star for star quite, but if you look
turned into stars.
Zdeno Chara was still a young defenseman who was really good. They still got him, and they got the first overall pick, which was Jason Spezza. So that's similar, I guess, but it wasn't really truly a star for star. Established star for an established mm-hmm. star. If you look at the ones that happened in hockey, we mentioned, you know, Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson, Danny Heatley for Marian Hossa.
Martin Havlett.
This was the one for the first one when
Atlanta-Ottawa.
Atlanta-Ottawa made that trade. That one worked out beautifully for both teams.
True.
Thrashers were trash. They ended up,
that one worked out great for Winnipeg.
It did. Well, eventually.
Yes.
But at least he wasn't the problem, though. Like, Hossa was fantastic in Atlanta, and then when
he went
off.
That line was great.
It was a great line.
That Savard, Kovalchuk.
Right. And Hossa line. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Danny Heatley had back-to-back 50-goal mm-hmm. seasons in Ottawa. They went all the way to the Cup final, almost won. I mean, they lost to Anaheim. So you're looking at that trade worked out. You can make the case of Ryan Johansson for Seth Jones worked out great for both teams.
Right.
And so, they may not have been superstars, but they're top 15-ish at their position at the time, and they've only grown into more since then with the Predators going to the Cup run. So it was a creative trade. You don't see a lot of these anymore because it's usually situation or circumstance kind of shows why the team is making a trade.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this one was just simply – okay, yes, a guy wanted out, but here's a minor improvement that we can make, and here's a minor downgrade we can make.
Oftentimes, in other sports, it's been interesting to see how they don't work out. For hockey, it seems like they can. The problem is, why don't we see more of these deals? When you look at the NBA offseason, for instance, it's unreal with the amount of movement you see. I know the NHL is a bit different. It's harder to move these deals and contracts. But considering how hard it is in the NBA to make these deals, because you have to take the equal money in, equal money out, and unless you have cap space and nobody has cap space, why don't we see more movement in the NHL? Is it simply because hockey culture is a bit more conservative by nature? They don't feel as willing to move guys. They'd rather just stick with the guys they have so far. Or is there something else at play?
Hmm.
I would say part of it is how much time is spent into development. That there's so much invested into a guy for 3 years from his 18-year-old all the way up into 21, and you want to see the fruits of your own labor put into that for your franchise. Whether that's right or wrong, because to me, like, if you tiered out a bunch of prospects and assets, you would say, okay, these guys are similar, so let's just get him into the squad, and then we like him better. I'm not sure if people look at it like that in the hockey world, where it's, well, I've got this guy. I know what he can do. I don't want to spend another 2 years trying to figure out this guy. Whereas I have this 21-year-old that we spent so much effort in
mm-hmm.
in the development process that we may as well just keep our own.
And I think also in the NHL, there's a lot more star players that have the no-trade clauses and no-movement clauses. So they really control a lot of their destinations. And sure, it would make sense for a team like Arizona to acquire more of these star players if they were to couple up some of their draft picks and young prospects. But then the question is, why would these star players ever choose to waive and go to a place like Arizona? So You don't often see that in the NBA
you
where these players
wave,
don't have that.
You just mentioned wave, right, with the no-trade clause situation.
Yeah.
Because when you go through the NBA, very few players have no-trade clauses.
Exactly.
You can't really get those. And in the NHL, they get handed out like it's candy.
They do have a lot of power, though. I mean...
Yeah. Well, contracts are also shorter in the NBA.
Yeah.
The max contract is 5 years, and only if the player is on your team. You can only offer 4 years. So teams are often in positions where guys are in the final year or two of their contracts and are looking to leave, mm-hmm. and teams want to move the guy and get something back in return before they have to make that decision. There is more movement. There is more freedom in the NBA for athletes than there is in hockey.
And Viking Stat also chiming in with the exact same point here. He said most big names in the NHL have those no-trade protection, whether it's a no-movement clause, no-trade clause. Viking Stat says, personally, I hope the next CBA will abolish no NTCs and NMCs. I don't see that happening. The players are not willing to give up on NTCs and
NMCs.
Well,
you know, the long every single time a CBA negotiation happens, the players have to give something up.
Of course.
This has been the case ever since the salary cap came in. Every single time the labor negotiations have come up, the players have had to sacrifice something, whether it is contract terms, the amount of money they can earn, the salary cap, mm-hmm. this and that. You would imagine over time, maybe just maybe, they are able to abolish these NTC and no movement clauses. Maybe your start would be you can have a no trade, you can't have a no move.
Mm-hmm.
And no move and no trade are very different because a no trade clause means you can't trade somebody, but you can put them on waivers, you can send them down to the minors. You can make them eligible for an expansion draft. No movement clauses are essentially you can't do anything.
Fully protected.
Yeah. So I think the next step would be maybe the no movement clauses come off and the NTCs exist, but it may take like 3 or 4 labor negotiations, quote-unquote lockouts, before we get to that
point. See the players being more willing to do something like where every NTC or any NMC has built in the list of teams that you're willing to go to from day one, whereas some NTCs, some NMCs that you see in the league, you have to wait to a certain point of that term, whether it's year 3 or year 4, before that particular thing kicks in. Why not just start it from day one and give your GM a little bit more flexibility of where you might eventually end up? But entirely, it's up to you whether or not you want to waive, right? So the player still has the control and the influence. Now the GM just has more wiggle room.
When it comes to the National Hockey League as well, like it's gonna take some time before all these things happen. But I am very curious to see what happens in the next round of labor negotiations, because if the NHL has its way, you're gonna see contracts come down even more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the max will be 7 years for a player that's gonna be re-signed on your team, maybe 6 years as a free agent. This is just going to go down and down and down and down, because you can't see long trades and you don't see those long contracts anymore. The 8-year contracts are only for players that are within that organization as well. That's going to change. It will change. Every single time these labor negotiations happen, the players have to give something up. And I would imagine next time around, contract lengths will come down a bit. And that's just the reality.
Possible, but I think the players are also very aware of what's going on. And if the NHL signs this new big lucrative TV deal after watching what the UFC and what WWE just signed for, they know there's a lot of money to be had by the NHL. And what's the product on the ice that gets that particular money in the price range? It's the players themselves and what they mm-hmm. do out there. So they're going to be very astutely aware of what the league is going to be doing with their own finances.
Yeah, like this reply that just came in via Twitter, you know, league limited RFA. Like, what if in exchange for removing trade protection, league limits RFA offer sheet compensation to one first round pick max and lowers the age of UFA by one more year? There is going to be a give and take. So if you give something up, you're giving something else back. So these things will happen over time. You're going to see more players hit free agency and more players have freedom. They won't have as much protection with no trades and no move clauses over the years, but you're going to see players have a lot easier time over the next 10-15 years in leaving a market if they don't want to stay there.
I'm also curious if contract lengths get shorter, because as you mentioned about the NBA, I know that's a big problem in the NFL, and players can't hit free agency for 7 accrued season. I'm curious if that dips down to...
Well, it used to be over 30.
6? Yeah.
It used to be over 30, and then when the CBA came in, the initial salary cap came in, they dropped it down to, I think it was 28, now it's 27. So you're looking at guys becoming free agents, after, as you mentioned, as early as 25 if you have 7 accrued seasons, if you start playing at the age of 18.
But like with the ELC and that second contract always seems to be so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if that's going to be the sticking point for the owners. That they say, well, we need to figure out a bridge kind of deal. And if you want more bridge deals, you're probably going to get UFA age to come down as well. and shorter contracts seem to be the trend across the leagues now.
How about this?
Because the NBA set that precedent.
How about every player coming off their ELC can only sign a max length contract with that team for a maximum 3 years, 4 years? So, like, every player has to have that bridge deal, as you say. And then it's up to you whether or not you want to keep that player after the bridge deal to the fully term, whether it's 7 years, 6 years, you got that. Yeah, I think that's an interesting
option. Like, 7, 8 years is a long commitment, and I'm not sure if teams love that.
No, teams don't like that idea. They'd love to get that lowered by quite a bit.
Right.
I mean, like you mentioned, the NBA, the max contract is 5 years. 5 years, and only for a team that has a player under contract already for a couple of years. You have to have your bird rights, so to speak, to get that. So it's not even that easy, and you can only give 2 5-year contracts per team.
Mm.
The NBA is trying really hard to limit the building of super teams, but you know how they've gotten around it in the NBA? Because the teams, players can earn so much money that a guy can sign a 2-year deal worth $60-70 million,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, well, I'll just sign the 2-year deal. I'm okay with signing 2 years. That's what Kevin Durant did.
Right.
He's getting paid $30 million this year and $30 million this past year. A 2-year, $60 million contract.
It's good money to play with Steph Curry,
mm-hmm.
and also live on the coast,
right.
and also win championships.
Yeah.
And that's part and parcel because of how much the TV deal has skyrocketed the cap in the NBA, and I guess it'll smooth out now as the finances start to catch up to the league economics. But a league like the NHL kind of needs another TV deal to start seeing their cap support the economics of the league,
mm-hmm.
because they need more revenue. You can't keep resorting to, hey, we have another new NHL team to bring in $650 million.
Well, that's why the big TV deal coming up with the U.S. over the next few years is going to be the big one. And the buzz seems to be that the NHL will end up back on ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be the ploy here, because ESPN has been making a big push in recent years to get away from the original programming, which they've done a good job with, but now they're trying to get back into the play-by-play. And especially with how you can throw these games up on the digital media platforms now, it's more about streaming than it is having games on TV.
Right,
and ESPN
right.
has all those platforms, and they have a much bigger audience. And if they can make the biggest money offer, which I'm sure they would like to do considering the growth of the NHL, mm-hmm. don't be surprised if the NHL goes back to ESPN in the States.
And it goes with how we consume TV. We like, when was the last time you watched a TV show live on air, right? Like,
bro, I don't even have cable.
So what you need to sell urgency on TV.
Yeah.
yeah.
And you do it with live sporting event. And
I stream everything.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And you can record sports and watch them later,
sure.
but there's this special, like when it comes to sports, watching it live and being engaged, whether you're watching with friends or you're texting your buddies or you're on social media, mm-hmm. having that social experience, the live experience is what draws you to that game because you're watching it unfold in real time. You know, a lot of us are forced to record on certain aspects to watch it, but really, like truly, as a sports fan, we all enjoy watching the game live. Mm-hmm. We don't want to watch anything else live, but sports, we prefer to watch live, even on TV.
Especially, and streaming services are picking up for sports. And they're all invested in that. And don't believe the hype that the NFL number TV ratings went down. The overall consumption
mm-hmm.
went up,
mm-hmm.
including NFL Game Pass Online for
yep.
people that had DAZN or anything like that. It was the overall product still went up.
And I think that's what we mentioned. Are we going to see more trades in National Hockey League? Well, once the salaries go up, the contract lengths come down, if no move protections
become,
move up, you'll see more and
right.
more deals mm-hmm. like the NBA. I think that's what's holding it back. And, this conversation was spawned on how many big player-for-player deals have we seen? And we're getting a lot of text messages on this as well. And Alan and Burnaby brings up the Shea Weber for PK Subban one we mentioned before. And it is true, because at the time, regardless of what you think of Shea Weber today, at the time, that was a momentous move. You're like, wow, you just saw superstar for superstar get traded. It seems like Shea Weber is on the downside of his career at this point, whereas PK Subban's still in his prime. But
mm-hmm.
at the moment, that was a big trade. And Jordy texts into our 650-650 text message inbox as a one-for-one trade that was big at the time, James Van Riemsdyk for Luke Shen. They weren't established stars quite, but they were both two young players who had shown well and were seen as core players. Van Riemsdyk was seen as a core forward, and Luke Shen was seen as a top four defenseman with potential. So it's similar.
It's a good trade there,
and
JVR obviously blossomed in Toronto, whereas Luke Shen didn't really exactly have the career that lived up to his draft position. But regardless of what you think about Shea Weber, let's not ignore the fact that he's an Olympic gold medalist, and at the time he was coming off a really good season. Plus,
mm-hmm.
he was a like a perennial contender for Norris trophies. He's never won any, but he was always in the race.
Well, Shea Weber in his prime was a fantastic defenseman. He's not a bad defenseman at this point, but he's gone through injuries. He's on the other side of 30, has a lot of money left, and that's a bit tough. I like this one from Mike Nozaki on our 650-650 text message inbox. Vincent Damphous for Pierre Turgeon. It's good.
Yeah, it's going back.
It's going back. I like that. That's a throwback.
And an example there that you have to go back that far to see how rare these trades really seem to be.
Well, I guess
across all platforms.
Would you say the beret for Jovanovski essentially was a star for star? Because Jovo was coming off a great rookie season, known as one of the best young defensemen in the game. Pavel Bure was
obviously
a superstar, no
might
question.
Need one more year.
Yeah.
Right, but Jovo was coming off. Like, he was considered maybe the best young defenseman in the league at the time, one of the rising stars of the game.
I suppose that's the same ilk of Seth Jones and Ryan Johansson.
I know Bure was obviously more established at the time. He was also holding out, didn't want to play for Vancouver. But we don't see many of them, and oftentimes they don't always work out. But that's one that actually worked out for both teams because he was pretty good, Bure, when he was healthy in Florida. I think he had a 60-goal season.
Luongo Bertuzzi?
Two of them in Florida. Yeah. What's that?
Luongo Bertuzzi?
Yeah.
Of the similar mold because one guy was the older and obviously on the way down, but you just got Roberto Luongo who was only on the way down.
Yeah, and Bob in Richmond chimed in with Yashin for Spezza and Chara. We talked about that one. It wasn't quite at guys who were established stars, but that's of similar ilk. You don't see many of those trades, but they're a lot of fun to talk about when they do go down.
So big thanks to San Antonio and Toronto for doing that.
Yeah, and you know what team might trade another big player? It might be the Montreal Canadiens and Max Pacioretty. We're going to talk to Stu Cowan out of Montreal about what's the latest when it comes to the Habs. When is Max Pacioretty going to get traded? And how much faith does your organization have in Carey Price? We'll get into that and more right here on the home of the Canucks and the new home of the Vancouver Giants, Sportsnet 650.
The Playbook with Satyar Shah and John Jang on Sportsnet 650.
I'm definitely not in any rush. Like you said, there's a year left on my contract, so you know, I'm more worried about focusing on my game and coming back and trying to have a better year than I did last year and fix some parts of my game up. So, you know, that's something that will be dealt with when, you know, if they bring it up and talk about it, but, you know, I'm not too worried about it.
That is Brock Besser talking about his contract situation. Not too worried about it. He's more concerned about having a good year and then really banking that money. It is Throwback Thursday here on Sportsnet 650. So any requests for beats or songs that go back, send them in. 650-650 is our text message inbox. You can also call us, 604-280-0650, and tell DJ Honey Brown, Bick Nizar, what your request is. And as far as Brock is concerned with his contract situation, John, maybe the Canucks would like to get him signed to a team-friendly deal today, but why would Brock want to settle for a team-friendly contract now when he has the potential to only up his value with a big sophomore season?
Exactly. I mean, there's lots of money on the line here for Brock Besser, and it's entirely up to him how many goals he manages to score in this second year. So not surprising to hear such a young player wanting to wait it out, play the patient game. I'm sure he and his camp have had a few moments of conversation with the Canucks, but he's doing what I think is best for him, and there's nothing wrong with that. Players should absolutely capitalize on their earning potential.
If you could get Brock Besser signed to a contract, say, that was 7 years worth $6 million per season today.
Seven times six? Okay.
Yeah. Would you say no to that?
If I was Brock Besser?
No, I mean, just from the Canucks' perspective.
Oh, seven times six? That'd be great. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
No, I'd sign.
That's a bargain, it feels
I'd sign
like.
Brock. If the offer was 7 years, $6 million per season, or even 6.5, no issue signing that.
Yep.
If he wants $7 million or more, then I can understand how you want to see one more year of, is he truly a plus 30 goal scorer? Mm-hmm. And if he is, then you feel really good about paying him $7 million. Because even if he is a, say, 25, 30 goal guy and he makes 6.5, you consider how contract values are going up. You just saw the contracts that are being signed. Bo Horvat signed a deal last year worth $5.5 million per season. And as good as Bo Horvat is, as far as a offensive talented player goes, we would rank Brock Besser one notch above him. Now,
right,
you can mention the center position, more defensive value, so on and so forth, positional value. But if Brock continues to be an elite goal scorer, even if you paid him $6.5 million, even if he's only a 30 goal guy, that's fine. If he scores 40 next year, that number is going to start with 7.5 or 8.
And that's fine. That's fine because you want Brock to be that player, don't you? And you're willing to pay for that type of player. Now, I wonder who's more curious about one another's contract scenarios. Patrick Laine's camp watching Brock or Brock Besser's camp watching Patrick Laine? Laine had 36 goals in his rookie year, 44 just this past season. We know Laine's a bit more of an accomplished offensive weapon in the NHL. He has that 1 year advantage on Brock, but they're both entering the final year of their ELC at the same time. Also, another Jets player who's also entering that final year, Kyle Connor. His numbers very similar to Brock Besser this past year. Matt Barzell out of the New York Islanders. All three of these guys have a fate that's seemingly intertwined together because of their contract status and how much money they might be demanding out of their respective teams. This is why the Winnipeg Jets are going to be an interesting team to keep an eye on for the next couple of days, because Jacob Trouba and the Winnipeg Jets apparently still remain $3 million apart in what they're asking for out of salary arbitration, and that arbitration is in less than 24 hours right now.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating to keep an eye on the arbitration situations as well. As far as, I mean, Brock Besser, though, and even if he's not eligible to be given an offer sheet next year.
Mm-mm.
So even if he does become RFA, nobody can offer sheet him. So there's no concern about Brock Besser getting to RFA status and somebody trying to poach him. He won't be eligible for that anyways. So it's something to keep in mind, but I don't anticipate Brock Besser and the Canucks agree to a contract extension this summer. I think, as Brock mentioned, he's not worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to play through the season, have a good year, and then they'll worry about it next offseason. And you know, if he has a great year, you pay the man. If he's worth the money, then he's worth the money.
Exactly.
And hopefully he has a good year. I would love to see him be worth the money. We're going to be talking to Stu Cowan here in a matter of moments, who covers the Montreal Canadiens for the Montreal Gazette. And the two of the biggest names on the trade market right now, Erik Karlsson and Max Pacioretty. It seems like Max Pacioretty's time in Montreal is done. The question is, when does he get traded? And to talk about that, we do have Stu Cowan on the line right now. Stu, thanks for joining us. How's your summer going so far?
It's going great. It's been some great weather in Montreal. We've had a heat wave, mm-hmm. and it's been beautiful. We can use a little rain at this point. My backyard grass is all brown, but yeah. It's been a great summer so far.
Well, I hear that about here because, I mean, as beautiful as Vancouver is, it hasn't rained in a few days, and it is getting a bit too hot at times. Now, you know, are you going to wait to take time off before Max Pacioretty gets traded then? Because, you know, you can't take time off. And then we know what's going to happen, right? You'll take next week off, and then Max gets traded.
Well, the thing is, Pat Hickey and I split the Canadians' duties, and he's off the month of July, and I'm off the month of August. So after next week, I'm actually headed to Cooperstown next weekend for Vladimir Guerrero's induction, and then after that, I'm on vacation, and Pat Hickey will be on the Pacioretty watch.
You know, before we get out of here, I do want to ask you about Vlad a little bit, because I think it's fascinating. But as far as Max Pacioretty is concerned, do you expect that he will get traded between now and training camp, or could we see him don a Habs jersey again come training camp?
Well, I think Mark Bergevin wants to trade him between now and training camp. I mean, it's going to be a mess if Pacioretty comes back to training camp as the captain going into the final year of his contract, knowing the GM's been trying to trade him. I mean, there were reports that there was a deal done with the LA Kings, but the Kings wanted Max to agree to a long-term contract extension before finalizing the trade, and he refused to do that. So, you know, it'd be an ugly situation if Pacioretty's back in the locker room at training camp after everything's gone on this summer. But I don't think Max Pacioretty is going to do anything to make Mark Bergevin's job easy, and I don't see why he should. I think I'm sure Max feels disrespected with the way he's been treated. I mean, here's a guy who had four straight 30-goal seasons. He had a bad year last year, but so did everybody else on the team. I think the constant trade rumor talk affected Max. I think it hurt his play. I think he had that in the back of his head. And he had a knee injury at the end of the year also. But you know, here's a guy who's been a reliable 30-goal scorer on a team that he's never played with a legitimate number one center. He's been able to score goals on a team that can't score goals. He's been their captain, and now they don't want him anymore. It's not a good situation, and I can understand why Max Pacioretty feels hurt, but this has become a common theme with Mark Bergevin. Players who love Montreal and want to play in Montreal and want to stay here. Max has a home here. He stays here 12 months a year. Those are the guys that he seems to get rid of. If you go back to PK Subban, if you look at Andre Markov and Alexander Radulov last year, two players who really wanted to stay here. Max Pacioretty's in the same boat. But I think the writing was on the wall for Pacioretty at the end of last season when Bergevin came out, and the biggest excuse he had for the team's season was a bad attitude in the locker room.
Mm.
Well, if there's a bad attitude in the locker room and the GM says that, that doesn't say a lot about the captain. In my viewpoint, that says more about the GM because he's the guy who put all those guys in the locker room. But it's not a pretty situation, and I'm sure Mark Bergevin wants to trade Max Pacioretty before training camp starts. But again, I don't think Max Pacioretty is going to do anything to make that situation easy for him, unless Bergevin gets a trade to a team that Max really wants to go to.
What kind of trade return are we talking about for a Max Pacioretty? Because you think the Montreal Canadiens, after recently drafting a guy like Jesperi Kotkaniemi, you want to focus on the future. Drouin's not that old, so you can still have him part of the core. And yet, Carey Price's mega contract now kicks in at the age of 30. What is Marc Bergevin trying to accomplish?
It's a good question. I mean, as I've said, he's sort of like throwing pucks at the wall and hoping some of them stick. They won't use the word rebuild. Both Bergevin and Jeff Molson, the owner, refused to say the word rebuild. Bergevin said like a reset, but it's certainly starting to look like a rebuild. I mean, a full rebuild to me would include trying to trade Carey Price and that contract and even Shea Weber, although Shea Weber's health throws another wrench into those plans. So they're sort of semi doing a rebuild, but not really doing a rebuild. And they're counting on these two centermen that they drafted in the first round the last 2 years, Ryan Poehling and Jesperi Kotkaniemi, to come along and fill that number one center role that's been vacant for so long. But in the meantime, who's going to score for this team? I mean, they traded Alex Galchenyuk for Max Domi, who had 9 goals last year, including 4 into an empty net.
Right.
And if they get rid of Max Pacioretty, like, who's going to score on this team? This is a team that couldn't score last year. They finished 29th in offense. So it doesn't look good for the Canadiens going into this season. I mean, I think they could be worse than they were last year.
The Canadiens still don't really have a number one center unless they really try and hope and pray that Drouin can actually get it done, or maybe they decide Max Domi, the experiment, is brought back here. Do you think Kotkaniemi has a pretty good chance of making the team just as a result of the fact that they're pretty thin yet again down the middle, even going as far as signing Tomas Plekanec, 35-year-old Plekanec, to a one-year deal yet again?
Yeah, I mean, Kotkaniemi signed the contract, an NHL entry-level contract, and Bergevin left the possibility of him playing either in Montreal or Laval as a possibility after that contract was signed. From seeing the kid at evaluation camp, he's obviously skilled. He's got to fill out a bit. He's not, he's still a little skinny on the skinny side, which is normal for an 18-year-old kid. I don't know if he's ready to step right into the NHL. I mean, he did play pro last year in the Finnish league against men. And if this is sort of a rebuild, I don't see why they would want to rush him. I mean, I could see maybe having him play in Laval if they want him to play in North America and play in a North American sized rink. I could see that as a possibility. But, you know, Bergevin said we'll see what happens at training camp. And, you know, stranger things have happened. Victor Mete made the team out of training camp last year on defense as a fourth-round pick and played quite well as an 18-year-old, as an undersized 18-year-old defenseman in the NHL. So, I mean, the games right now, I guess anything's possible, but I'd sort of be surprised if he ends up playing in Montreal next season.
We're talking to Stu Cowan about the Montreal Canadiens. He writes for the Montreal Gazette. And, you know, what I'm trying to figure out about Marc Bergevin and this Habs organization, what is their identity? Because you see some deals that they have a lot of these gritty two-way guys. I mean, they added Max Domi, they traded skill guys, but then they added Jonathan Drouin. What type of team do you think Bergevin's trying to build here long-term?
Well, they said they want to have sort of a young, fast team, which why did you get Carl Alzner last year to play defense? I mean, that's a contract that a signing that's really backfired. I mean, Carl Alzner, you know, might be the nicest guy you'll ever meet in the NHL. But, you know, the game has sort of passed him by with the speed of today's NHL, and speed isn't his game. You know, Shea Weber isn't exactly the fastest guy back there either, although he's still, you know, one of the top defensemen in the NHL when he's healthy. So, as I said, it's like throwing pucks at a wall and hoping something sticks. They don't really seem to know, have a set plan. I mean, to me, I think fans are just really frustrated here. I think fans would be happy if Marc Bergevin and Jeff Molson came out and did what Brendan Shanahan did after he took over the Leafs and said, we're rebuilding. There's going to be some years of pain. It's going to be ugly, but we're going to be better in the future. And, you know, that Shanahan plan worked quicker than expected in Toronto, and it led to them signing John Tavares. And, you know, as many people have said, you know, 5 years ago, John Tavares probably would not have wanted to play in Toronto. And right now, none of these big-name free agents want to play in Montreal. The Canadiens, you know, Paul Stastny and Tavares wouldn't even meet with the Canadiens. They had absolutely no interest in coming here. And you can see why. I mean, this is a team that's floundering, a team that finished 28th in the NHL last season. They were 29th in offense. I believe they were 25th or 26th in defense. Carey Price had a bad year. You know, Carey Price is 31 years old going into an 8-year contract. There's still 8 years left on Shea Weber's contract. There's not, you know, if you're a free agent, there's a lot more reasons not to come to Montreal than there are to come here. You know, you factor in the taxes, the weather, the language, all that kind of stuff. You sort of like, why would a free agent want to come here? And, you know, the Canes have lived on their glory years of the past for a long time. But for, you know, for a younger generation of players, they don't really remember when the Canes were good. So it's, you know, it's a tough sell, I think, trying to get free agents to come here. And I think it will continue to be that. So having said that, that's why going through a rebuild with your young players and bringing them up here and letting them grow up together on and off the ice and allow them to make mistakes and learn from them. But, you know, developing young players has not been one of the Canadian strong points over the years. And the rebuild also, when you're doing a rebuild with the GM who put the team in this situation over the last 6 years, is sort of a little bit head shaking also.
When you, I mean, we mentioned Carey Price's contract, 8 years, $10.5 million, and it kicks in this year. Would it take Carey essentially saying, I want out, for them to realize what they have to do and rebuild this entire thing? Because it doesn't seem like they're going to trade him unless he's the one that pushes that issue.
Yeah, well, I mean, he has a no-trade clause in the contract also. So, I mean, but you'll wonder, I mean, when Carey Price signed that contract, I don't think this is a defense he expected to be playing behind. I think he probably thought they were going to re-sign Andrei Markov. And, you know, Mark Bergevin played hardball with Andrei Markov. And Markov said he felt disrespected. And that's one of the reasons why he left and went to Russia. And the Canes really missed him last year. You know, Shea Weber's going to be out until December now. You know, their number one defenseman looks like it's going to be Jeff Petrie. And, you know, he did the best he could last year to fill that role. But Jeff Petrie's not really a number one defenseman in the NHL. It was almost unfair to him. And so, you know, Carey Price playing behind this defense, is that, you know, it's not going to be easy for him to rebound and have a good year. You know, last year, Mark Bergevin said the defense was going to be better than it was the previous year. And obviously it wasn't. And next year it could be even worse. So, you wonder if Carey Price would want to get out, if he did, there would be a limited number of teams he would say he would want to go to. He's at that point in his career where the only thing missing on his resume is a Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't look like that's anywhere in the near future for the Canadians. So that might be a reason why he might be willing to leave. But again, that contract's going to be hard to move too, with a 31-year-old goalie with 8 years on a contract at $10.5 million a year.
Yeah, it's not looking very good in Montreal these days. But given the state of that franchise and the fact that we know winning solves everything, how much interest do you think the Canadians would have in, say, a guy like Matt Duchene, also entering the final year of his contract? He's a legitimate center, gives you an option down the middle in the top two lines at some point, gives Kotkaniemi a bit of time to develop in the minors, and then you maybe can entertain an option of Max Pacioretty going to Ottawa and Matt Duchene coming to Montreal, of course needing to add a few pieces in going both ways.
I mean, it could be a possibility. I mean, you know, it would certainly help the Canes at the center position where they're really needing help. You know, Duchene's a free agent next season. The other big center who's a free agent next summer is Tyler Seguin. You know, he has a history, though, with Claude Julien that isn't necessarily that good going back to his days in Boston. But, you know, a Duchene deal would, you know, I could see that sort of making sense. And then you know, it looks, as it is now, it looks like they're going into year two of the Jonathan Drouin experiment at center, which wasn't very good last year. You know, trying to hammer a square peg into a round hole, which the Canadians have done in a lot of other previous occasions also. But, you know, that would make sense. I mean, it sort of makes sense because both players are free agents at the end of next season. So it's not a case of, you know, you're trading one guy for another guy that could leave at the end of the year. You know, would Matt Duchene want to resign in Montreal? Maybe he would. I mean, I've heard some people telling me that he loves the Canadians and would be interested in playing here. Whether that's true or not, I can't confirm. But yeah, that's a deal that I could see making some sense for sure.
And Stu, before you let you go, you mentioned Montreal has not had an easy time attracting free agents because the team obviously hasn't been great recently. And one of the things we've talked a lot about in recent years is a taxation issue and how some cities like, say, Tampa and Dallas have better, more favorable tax rates. And then you look at some Canadian markets like Montreal where the tax rates aren't as favorable. How much do you think that plays into it nowadays?
I think it plays into it. I spoke with Alan Walsh, the agent who's actually representing Max Pacioretty now. Pacioretty changed agents recently, and he said, you know, there's ways for agents and their tax people to work it out that the tax isn't as bad as people think it is in Montreal or other Canadian cities. There's ways that they can work their ways around it, but it's still going to be higher than it is in, you know, Florida, where there's no state tax, or Dallas. I mean, one of the reasons Radulov liked the Dallas offer is because of the tax situation. And basically, the Canadians would have, from what I've been led to believe, would have had to basically pay him an extra year on that contract for him to have the same money in his pocket at the end of the day. So it is a factor. I mean, it's a factor in Toronto also, but you know, if you're John Tavares and you look at, you know, $77 million contract, I'm sure he has more money than he ever spend, or you would hope so anyway. You know, it's his hometown, and he wants to play for a winning team. And you know, there was a time back when young French Canadian players wanted to play for the Canadians. And then you look at the guys like Vinny LeCavalier and Daniel Briere, although he did end up here later in his career, he didn't want to play here in his prime. You know, tax is part of it, the constant scrutiny here from both media and fans. You know, as players who have played with the Canadians will all say, you know, when you're winning, Montreal is the best place to play, and when you're losing, it's probably the worst. And this team has done a lot of losing the last few years, so it's not really the most pleasant place in the NHL for a player to be right now.
It sounds a lot like Vancouver when things are good and when things aren't as going as well.
Yeah,
That's the nature of these Canadian markets. Hey, Stu, thanks so much for giving us some time. Hopefully this Max Pacioretty deal happens in July before you take time off in August.
All right. Nice talking to you guys.
You too. That is Stu Callum from Montreal Gazette. Some great insight on what's going on with the Montreal Canadiens. And the Pacioretty thing to me is just fascinating because it's gotten beyond the point of I just want out. It's gotten personal.
Mm-hmm.
And he switched agents, Max Pacioretty did, because he felt that Brisson was too chummy with Mark Bergevin, mm-hmm. and they weren't having, and his agent wasn't having Max's best interests in mind, maybe, and he felt uncomfortable with him, so he switched over to Octagon and Alan Walsh's agency, and Alan Walsh does not mess around either.
Nope.
So right now, you know, as Stu mentioned, Max has no interest in helping the Montreal Canadiens in any way possible. He still wants out, so how do you make this work? And, you know, we got a text message here to our 650-650 text message inbox. Man, if Pacioretty is still in Montreal at training camp, it will be the same as Duchesne with the Avalanche. What a distraction. And he makes a great point.
Yeah, but Duchesne being a little bit younger and playing that premium position, his return was always going to be more than what a Pacioretty trade is going to get for the Montreal.
Of course, but as far as a distraction goes,
absolutely.
And how hard it is, you saw what it did. I mean, that was dragging that team down. It was dragging that organization down. Matt Duchesne facing the media, walking off from the media, saying, I don't want to be here, but I'm showing up for my teammates.
Yep.
That's a bad situation, especially for your captain, the guy wearing the C.
Right.
You have to move him before training camp.
It is a lot of troubling news here in Montreal, because you look at that team, they're not a very good team. Like, they've got some good players. Carey Price, great player. Drouin should be a good player. But they're not a very good team the way they're constructed right now. And yet they're handcuffed and they can't commit to a rebuild. They won't even say the word.
And, you know,
what is rebuild in French anyways?
Well, I mean, you can look it up. But I think for Montreal, when you do have Carey Price at $10.5 million for the next 8 years, you have essentially Shea Weber's contract into perpetuity at $7 million per season. That means you have about almost $20 million of your cap over the next 8 years at least is given to two guys. So when you got that hanging over you, it's hard to completely strip it down.
Yeah.
So what do you do? And as Stu mentioned, when your goalie's making $10.5 million, it's 30 years old, coming off a couple injury-plagued seasons. He's still a great goalie, but he's 30.
Mm-hmm.
8 years to go, $10.5 per year. How many teams are banging on the door to trade for Carey Price? I'm sure there are teams that are interested. Of course there are. But will it be a team that he's willing to go to since he has a no-movement clause? What do the Habs want in return? Do they have to retain salary? Do they have to take a bad contract in return? These are situations that I can understand
mm-hmm.
why it's hard for them to go down the rebuild path. But it tells you when you misjudge what your team is and you make decisions like the Shea Weber trade, like giving Carey Price that extension, like trying to win now.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're suffering for it because you're caught in limbo. You're trying to rebuild on the fly. You're trying to get younger, but you're still trying to be competitive with guys like Carey Price and Shea Weber under contract for so much longer. It's not an easy road to navigate. A lot of it, though, is Bergevin's fault himself of putting himself in this position. But where they are right now is not an easy spot to get out of.
If I'm Mark Bergevin, I'm calling Lou Lamoriello on Long Island every single day and trying to see if you can accommodate a Carey Price trade. But then the optics of the Montreal Canadiens trading away one of the best goalies arguably in the world right now, it's not a good time at all for Mark Bergevin. I'd be highly surprised and shocked if he's around for the Canadiens to make a draft pick for next year.
We'll see. Him and Jeff Molson's relationship is very tight.
You might say?
I mean, over the past couple of years, there has been a sense of, well, would this go sideways? Would things not work anymore? At some point, would Jeff Molson not just say goodbye to Mark Bergevin? He was handed a 5-year extension not that long ago. I mean, I don't think it's a guarantee that he gets fired next season. And if Montreal does somehow stay more competitive next season, maybe they do hold him around. And when you have Carey Price as your goalie, I can see them being close enough to the playoff race that they look at it and say, well, we're close. We're a year away. So, you know, I think it's a really complicated situation that they found themselves in.
I'm curious if there was a lot of shivers down the listeners' spines when they heard, oh, yeah, they won't use the term rebuild. They're using terms like reset.
Yeah. Well, it sounds familiar, doesn't it?
I've heard that somewhere before.
Can't put my thumb on it.
It took a few years before the Vancouver Canucks were willing to use the word rebuild, and people still debate whether they are truly, quote-unquote, rebuilding to that extent. But as far as you look at when it comes to the Montreal Canadiens, you know, as long as you have Shea Weber and Carey Price taking up almost $20 million of your cap space, it's hard to, quote-unquote, rebuild. Well, at least Vancouver doesn't have those big contracts hanging over their heads for the next 10 years. We look at Louis Erickson, next 4 years, $6 million per season, and we're like, at least it's not 8 years or 10 years or whatever the case is. All right, we have some basketball stuff to get to on the other side, some baseball news and notes, and also the British Open update, because Tiger Woods having a pretty okay day so far, and we're gonna replay the interview of Brock Besser and Keith Ballard joining us right at noon. So stay tuned right here on Sportsnet 650. Take me
home to the place. It's the Playbook with Satyar Shah and John Jang on Sportsnet 650.
Top of the right circle, Besser for the slap shot, scores! Oh, baby, Brock Besser is back. His second of the night, 5-on-3 power play goal.
Ka-boom! Wow, that was an absolute bomb. Brock Besser with a statement.
Bring it on home, bring it on home. That is Brock Besser.
I needed
Besser
to spruce up the song there. That was my request.
By request, it is Throwback Thursday, hashtag TBT here on the Playbook with Sat, John, and Bick Nizar. Don't sing, John. Please do not ruin the song. I like it too much.
Well, Jackson from Coquilla wanted to know if John would dab to it.
Well, John will dab and sing along to anything.
But at least he didn't dab. He kind of leaned back in his chair.
And he sang along really loudly.
Got very contemplative and sang.
Thankfully, I had my mic off during that point, but I was belting out those words, man. Great song, Jackson and Coquitlam. There you go, doing us proud.
We don't get a lot of country requests, so I thought I'd fit it in.
No, we'll take country music requests. We'll take any requests here on Throwback Thursday. John was trying to get a request in, and we said, no, the listeners get requests before you do. We have at least one more that has to be played by request from a listener before we can get to yours. And I'm sorry, John, if we get a third request that comes in, you're going to be fresh out of requests.
Come on.
Let's get the jangles. Thursday is for our listeners. It's for them to have a good time and be allowed to throw in their thoughts, and we oblige.
Yes, true.
Well, I'm not going to oblige to your song requests.
It's a good song. It's a good song. I'm not going to reveal what it is because maybe we'll get to it eventually, but it's a good song. Can't wait for that one.
Yes. Was it a hit? Was it a song from a great album?
Oh,
actually, we won't go down.
Let's not dive into this.
You heard Brock Besser on the clip coming in. We had Brock and Keith Ballard join us for a very fun interview. We're going to play that interview back in its entirety coming up at noon. So stay tuned for that. It was fun. We got into obviously Brock's contract situation. We got into Brock's health. We got into what the Beauty League is all about, and we've had a lot of fun talking about how Brock's had back-to-back hat tricks at the Beauty League, and we all know it's just shinny hockey. Nobody's sitting here getting excited about Brock Besser lighting the lamp because he shows he's a superstar. I'm excited to see Brock playing at this league and having success because it tells me he's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
It tells me he's on the right track. His wrist is feeling better. His back is feeling better. He says he's going to be 100% by training camp, and he's going to be even better the next season. And the fact that you're seeing this kid coming off that broken bone in his back at the end of the season, and a bad wrist, that he's playing shinny hockey and doing well, even though it's shinny, I think it's positive. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, no one's saying, oh, look, two hat tricks in two games. Clearly he's going to go out there and rip 70 goals next year. That's not it at all. Everyone just needs to pump the brakes. It's more about the meaning of this game and what it translates to his overall well-being and how excited Canucks fans can get thinking about next year. And maybe he does score 70 goals. So whatever, man. To those who are being naysayers and trying to get angry about the fact that people are talking about him playing in the Beauty League, they're not beauties, okay? You are not beauties. You're not permitted to get excited about Beauty League stuff anymore.
John is dropping the hammer.
I've had it. And I want to hear my song request later on.
No.
I'll keep yelling until you get there.
You can keep yelling, and then Bick will turn off your microphone, just like he did right now.
What's going on?
I
can't hear myself.
There we go.
All right. Did you learn your lesson?
I'm sorry, Bick.
Okay. Do not try to steal
control. I get paid by the
word,
so please don't do that.
Yes. Now, we'll play that interview back coming up at noon, and we'll have a couple other Canucks topics around that, because one thing that came out over the DeRozan-Kawhi Leonard trade was how beloved DeMar DeRozan was in Toronto by Toronto fans. So we have a bit of a hypothetical about another beloved Canuck who's no longer with the team, and we kind of go back and say, well, what if the Canucks had traded this beloved player for a player who was better? But would you feel good about that? So we'll talk about that coming up in a bit. But there is some other news. I mean, the British Open is going on right now. Tiger Woods is playing. And, John, Tiger hasn't been bad. Now, you're talking about his first round.
Yeah.
He's not embarrassing himself. He was one under par last I checked, and he hasn't completed his round. But right now, four shots off the pace. It's not so bad.
Yeah, I'm very curious what's on the back of his neck. You know what I'm talking about? He's
got
these two little
things. I saw something. It's those athletic tapes they put on. I'm not sure what the company is, but it's a type of tape that essentially keeps your muscles relaxed or keeps them tight. It all depends on what he's trying to accomplish. Maybe he has some back concerns, but it's essentially to alleviate pressure and keep from straining.
So he's cheating?
No.
Okay.
It's like putting a wrap on your hand or something.
All right, that's fair. No, obviously in the world of golf, it's great when Tiger has a bit of success, but we saw this pretty recently where he had early success, and it's only Thursday. It all matters how well he performs in the consistency down the stretch.
It is only Thursday, yeah. But what we saw from Tiger before, too, was a bad day, a good day, a bad day, a good day. And if you want to win or at least be in contention, you can't have a horrible day at a major.
Especially not in the opening.
Right. So the first day to be around par and be one shot under at least so far and be close to the pace, it makes it interesting. And I'll never forget what Pat Mayo told us when he was on with us, a golf specialist, just a little while ago. And he mentioned, when Tiger Woods is in contention at a tournament, and we're talking about the Valspar, which wasn't even a really big regular tournament, interest in golf went up over 400%. There's no question that when Tiger Woods is in contention, the interest level skyrockets.
Massive.
Just massive. The best thing for golf would be for Tiger to be in contention all weekend long. If he wins, that's even better. But just to be in contention would drive the audience numbers up.
What an eye-opener, though, just seeing the course and seeing how dry and hot it really does look like. And we've heard a lot of these players deciding to keep their drivers away because they understand the ball is just going to roll a lot. It's windy and there's not much traction there from the grass to slow things down. Might be changing some strategies here. Of course, one player I'm keeping an eye on, the odds-on favorite to win the whole darn thing, Dustin Johnson, and seeing how he performs here. But pretty good for Tiger Woods to have a good start. I just want to see him carry that forth, and hopefully we have an exciting storyline by the time Sunday rolls around.
Just Jordan Spieth had some trouble in the first round again. So
he called that a brain fart.
Yeah, and I feel for him because it was last year when he won, and you looked at Jordan Spieth over the past few years as maybe being the next in line to truly be the next great golfer. And it just tells you how hard golf is, how that individual sport is so difficult to have success in, because a guy like Jordan Spieth, when it comes to natural talent, there are many players who have more talent than he does. But it's hard to be consistently good, you know, year in, year out, tournament in, tournament out. And right now, Jordan Spieth doesn't have his game.
No, he went from 3 under to 1 over in just 4 holes. The guy had a great start.
And then
a rough mid-patch there. But he's still 24, right?
He's still young.
But golf is an old man's game.
Well, no, it's not really an old man's game anymore. Like, you look at the young guys.
I'm not saying like 70-year-olds. I'm saying like, you know, as you get older, you can add more experience and you understand courses.
You can, but guys in their primes usually are in that 20 to early 30 range, right? I mean, that's when guys are in their primes. And when you look at Tiger Woods, when he was at a similar age as Jordan Spieth, he was just dominating the field.
Right.
And
but it's Tiger.
But that's the point, because we always compare the greatest at this point in time to the last great player in any sport. And the greatest player in recent memory was Tiger Woods. And he was so dominant that no matter what these other young golfers do, it seems like it's nothing in comparison. No, they're not as good. They're not even close to being in Tiger's level, because Tiger was just so darn good. It's almost unfair because, you know, we're looking at these guys saying, well, Jordan Spieth, is he really that good? Is Dustin Johnson really that good? He's not Tiger. Well, who was Tiger?
Right.
Jack Nicklaus, Tiger, guys who dominated the way they did. There's only two guys in history. Mm-hmm. So us moving off the Tiger era, and he's still in our consciousness, but it's almost unfair in how we evaluate the other young golfers because we all expect somebody to be the next Tiger.
That might
take a decade, 2 decades, 3 decades, 4 decades, or it may never happen.
Let me ask you this. What's better for the game of golf? Having that one ultra uber dominant player such as Tiger come back?
Having like Tiger. Look at the numbers. 400% increase doing well. You have Dustin Johnson.
Sure.
You have Jordan Spieth. Rory McIlroy.
I mean down
you
the
have
road.
All these
down
talented
the road,
young golfers.
After Tiger retires, I'm talking what is better for the game, to have that one just uber-talented Michael Jordan of golf, or have 3 or 4 or 5 guys who are within the same compete level, and on any given weekend, you have no idea who's going to
emerge from
the
top. What's better for the game? It's having that superstar. Basketball grew when Michael Jordan came to the scene. Mm-hmm. Golf grew when Tiger Woods came onto the scene. It's the superstars, it's like a dynasty too, right? Like you have to be at that extreme superstar level and be so far better than anybody else to become essentially a cross-platform star.
Mm.
And that's the only way you can grow the audience, where the star is so bright and so good that the average fan who has no interest in golf tunes in because he's like, or she's like, I have to watch this athlete. This athlete is so dominant. Even though I'm not a golf fan, I got to watch Tiger. That's what happened, because that's what grew the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Having 5 really good golfers is great for the pure golf fan, but to grow the sport, you need that superstar.
It's like one Sidney Crosby versus 5 John Tavares in any given league. Let's just use that as an example. You know, it's good to have the 5 John Tavares situation, because then, again, you don't know who's the odds-on favorite, so you're more captivated to watch and see who emerges as that winner.
You can look at I know I talk about tennis a lot, but there was Sampras and Agassi at one point.
Mm.
After that, we're talking like Gustavo Kuertens and Patrick Rafters. That's all good. You had to wait for the Federers and Nadals and Djokovic. Now you see tennis is back in the mainstream once again. It's not necessarily about combatants, the amount. It's more about the quality of the player or the quality of the team. And if you reach that top tier, everyone's going to want to tune in to see that, because it's going to be something they've never seen before.
We haven't seen that in golf, though, ever. Because you look at tennis, for instance, you have this era. Novak Djokovic, who's 4th in majors all time with 13. Sampras is 3rd with 14. And then is Nadal with 17. And then is Roger Federer with 20. 3 out of the top 4 best tennis players of all time are playing in this era.
Mm-hmm.
That's different than just being good. You're talking about 3 of the 4, maybe the 3 best tennis players of all time. You can make that argument. The 3 best players, the tennis players of all time, are playing right now.
Mm-hmm.
That is transcendent. If golf had 3 superstars at that level at the same time that are that dominant, then yeah, it'd be great to have the numbers. But
it
comes down, like Bick mentioned, you have to be at that elite superstar talent level that transcends all the other sports, that people want to tune in because they want to get a piece of that greatness.
Yeah, I can get behind that. So maybe instead of having like one Tiger, you have 5 smaller versions of Tiger, is what I'm saying, because the game of golf can absolutely continue to grow. And even fantasy golf is something that I learned more recently. I didn't even know it was a thing, quite frankly. So now that I'm learning this, and there's a chance for more of these, especially young players in their 20s, like Jordan Spieth, to become household names if they just continue to get there.
The idea of fantasy is exactly what it needs, and it is growing. You see, its social presence has just completely blown up. Fantasy just does that for sports.
Mm-hmm.
It took a long time with football, but people eventually caught up. It's happening for hockey now. It's happening with baseball. Basketball, it's kind of a bit more nuanced and it's a bit more cluttered. But golf is one of the ones that it's easy to do. You just kind of set it and forget it and you're back. And people are really into fantasy golf, more so than probably any of the other 3 sports I just mentioned there.
Mm.
Yeah, and
it's a young man's game too at that point.
Especially with daily fantasy.
Yeah.
It's the perfect daily fantasy sport, because it's just, pal, you set it, you come back the next day, and you kind of review what happened the day before. It's real simple.
But your star also has to be marketable too, right? Or at least has to embrace being marketable. And this brings us to what's going on with Major League Baseball right now. Mm-hmm. Look at Mike Trout. You can make the case that Mike Trout may end up being the single best baseball player of all time. He's on that path right now. That's how good Mike Trout has been.
Right.
But is he even the most well-known, biggest star in baseball right now?
Mm.
Or is Aaron Judge a bigger star because he plays in New York? And I'd rather have Mike Trout 10 out of 10 times. Not even a question.
Sure.
But if you ask the average fan, are they more into Aaron Judge because he's playing for the Yankees and he's more marketable and he embraces it? He's the big presence. And this this has become a front page story, especially in LA, because Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, was talking to the media recently around the All-Star break with the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game being held this week. And he was asked about Mike Trout and why baseball doesn't maybe market its star players. And he said, we'd love to market Mike Trout, but he doesn't want to do it himself. Mm-hmm. He doesn't embrace being that face of baseball. So, you know, we can't force the guy to become the face of baseball. A guy has to want to do it as well. And then Mike Trout and the Angels released a statement, and he said, listen, I want to move forward. I don't have anything against what Rob Manfred said. I have humility. The way I like to do things, I'm focused on baseball. I don't care about the outside of the field stuff. But does Mike Trout, as the best player in the game, have a responsibility to baseball, a sport that is dependent on an older generation that's not getting any younger? The numbers of young people becoming baseball fans are dwindling comparative to other sports. Does Mike Trout have a responsibility to put himself out there as one of the best players to ever play the game and maybe the best player currently playing in the game?
I think Mike Trout has a responsibility to the Angels. I don't necessarily think he owes the world of baseball anything. He's doing what he can do to help the game grow, which is be a fantastic player. For the Angels, he can help out their marketing by willing to do and sign autograph sessions, do charity work, get involved in the community. That's more what he's focusing on, and I don't blame him for that. Sometimes a player, a human being, even if they are God-given natural athletes who are some of the best at their respective games, they prefer to stay in the shadows, and not everyone's comfortable with public speaking, for example. So I don't blame Mike Trout for that. If he wants to just stay, sit back, allow some of the other young stars in the game, take all the fanfare, and he just does what he does best, hey, man, all the power to him.
Yeah. He doesn't really care about all the extra money. I know he's making a decent penny playing for the Angels, but his contract is a bit of a bargain right now, considering how much money is available to baseball players. But if you want to be known as that transcendent star yourself, at some point you have to sell yourself, because you're going to be selling your own legacy as well. One point in time, people want to be Mike Trout's going to be talking about what kind of player he was when he was over, when it was all said and done. And you don't have to go market yourself for people to understand how good you were, but he hasn't become the face of the league. I don't think he has a responsibility to do so, but I do think it's unfortunate he doesn't embrace it, because that's what baseball needs from its best player. Baseball needs somebody like him to come up and be the embraced face of the game. He's going to have, you need your best player, your best athlete to be the most marketable star in the game. That's what's going to help elevate your sport. But it's unfortunate that he doesn't, like I said, I don't blame him.
Right.
But you can't sit here and say it doesn't hurt the game. It does hurt the game. It hurts the game of baseball.
What if it would hurt him?
It hurts the game of baseball that he can't embrace it. And I said, I don't blame him, but you can't dispute the fact that him not embracing that aspect doesn't help. It doesn't.
Let me entertain this option for you. Let's say Mike Trout does become a public spokesperson, and he's out there with national cereal companies doing commercials left and right. He's becoming the Sidney Crosby of baseball. But all this attention, all these distractions, all this commitment to other businesses detracts away from his game. And he no longer becomes that really consistent slugger. And all of a sudden, because his play and his production just isn't there, What ended up happening? Everyone loses.
That's not necessarily what's going to happen, because other athletes like Michael Jordan, like Tiger Woods, even Alex Ovechkin, who've embraced everything that goes with being a star player, have their games tailed off? Have they shown that they can't do both?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be out there every second, filming yourself and having a social media stream at all times going. But it means that in the off season, you do a few commercials. You go out and do the rounds with the media, and you do put your face out there a little bit more. You do embrace it. I think there is a happy medium. And it's too bad that the best player in the game of baseball doesn't embrace it, because it would help the game. You want to grow the game? We keep talking about adding more young viewers, especially when it comes to baseball. Well, one way to sell the game is having your superstar be accessible and be relatable to that younger audience. And right now, Mike Trout isn't. And like I said, I don't blame him. I've always said, players can do whatever they want. You have freedom as a person. You have agency. but you can dispute that it doesn't help the game.
And let's not say Mike Trout doesn't do anything. He is a partner. He's an investor with a sports drink company. He's also their spokesperson for that. He has agreements and sponsorship with Subway, Super Pretzel, and Nike even sells Mike Trout branded shoes. So, like, he does
he has
do
sponsors.
Things. He has business ventures.
Well, yeah, he has sponsors, yeah. But he's not really putting himself out there, right?
And again, I feel like if he's helping out the Angels in marketing promo-wise and the local fans of Anaheim or L.A. or whatever, if they appreciate and can see him be the superstar that they need him to be in a local stage, that's enough. That's enough for him. I understand what you're saying, that you want the biggest, best players marketing themselves like that. But ultimately, if one person doesn't want to do it, there's nothing wrong with that. It all differs from person to person. Maybe it's just not within their personality.
There's an awesome tweet that went out last night or this morning from Mike Trout talking to a kid, a fan, who he brought out during batting practice. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of stretched with them, kind of did his own warm-up. And I think that's the kind of superstar Mike Trout wants to be. Mm-hmm. He wants to make more personal connections rather than just be, hey, here's my face on a bottle, here's my face on a product, and you don't really get to know me. But he's not trying to get to know everyone. He's trying to do it individually.
Which is beautiful. It's nice. I have a lot of time for that. But the point is, when your best player doesn't put himself out there and you need your best player, your best athletes to be the faces of your leagues to really sell the game, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, these guys sell the game.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James sells basketball.
Sure.
Sidney Crosby, Ovechkin, they sell hockey. You look at other sports. In baseball, their best player is not there doing so. It hurts the game. It hurts the longevity of the game. And I appreciate what he's doing. Like I said, I'm not holding it against him.
Right.
But the reality is baseball suffers when its best player isn't the most well-known baseball player in the world.
Thankfully, though, I mean, we are seeing more younger players start to emerge and want to be a part of that. Like you brought up Judge and the fact that, you know, his career has started off so successfully and so quickly too. It's just a matter of time
but
before
Mike
he
Trout's
becomes
different.
That next
name. No. Mike Trout is at a different level, dude. Mm. Like Mike Trout is maybe one of the best defensive outfielders the game's seen in a long time. He's one of the best base runners the game's seen. He's one of the best batters. He is arguably a top five player of all time right now.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Trout is at a different level. I don't think people understand how freaking good Mike Trout is.
His WAR is unbelievable.
He's on pace to have the most valuable career in baseball history.
Right.
And that includes Barry Bonds, who was roided up too.
Yeah, you're right. You make some,
you know, that's
very compelling argument.
And I don't think
on
people
that.
Understand how good Mike Trout is. I really don't think people understand that this guy is an absolute freak.
But Mike Trout don't care.
Right, but that's the problem. Isn't that the problem that people don't quite understand? The average sports fan doesn't quite understand how good Mike Trout is.
The AL MVP odds look like they just got released via Bet Online. He is an overwhelming favorite, mm-hmm. like -150.
Yep.
Which it just goes to show that
it's already a team that's not even in the playoff picture.
Yeah, it's already wrapped up.
Yeah.
Unless something happens here in the next.
His consistency 3 months. Through his career has been remarkable. And that's just what you face.
You know what, though? I think local market does play into it. Because if he was playing in New York, and the same guy, same career, same choices
and
everything.
He's playing in L.A.
Well, I know, but the Yankees.
Sure, but it's L.A.
The
Come
Yankees
on.
Are way bigger. And sometimes
sure,
it's all about
you're
where
LA.
You're playing and
you're
which jersey you got
LA.
Going.
L.A.
Sure.
LeBron James played in Cleveland.
If he was playing for the Dodgers,
he played
it'd be
in
different.
Cleveland.
If he was playing for the Dodgers, it'd be different.
LeBron James played in Cleveland.
Sure. But LeBron also overwhelmingly, you know, embraced that role as
That's
being
the
face
point.
Of basketball.
That's the
I
point
get it.
I'm
and
making.
I'm saying it for Mike Trout, even if he would just, same career, same everything, but just decided, or whatever, it was playing in New York for the Yankees.
Right.
Or Toronto for the Blue Jays. You know, all that attention would be way bigger because of the fact that he's playing in that particular market.
Sure.
Anaheim, the Angels, it's not exactly the
but
same.
But that's why it comes down to him embracing it, John, right? Because he's not in that perfect situation where it can all organically happen. He has to embrace it. Mm. He doesn't have to, but it hurts the game that he doesn't.
He's the one that got away.
I like this. Before we get out of here, I like this tweet about tennis we were talking earlier. This is from Patrick Petrin on Twitter. Bjorn Borg is for tennis as Wayne Gretzky was for hockey. Only difference is Borg retired from tennis at the age of 26 when he was ranked number one in the world. Borg did not retire so young. He would have been known as the greatest of all time. He'd definitely be up there with Federer. That's a good point. I've brought this story up, like Bjorn Borg was such a star in Sweden when I was growing up that I bought a pair of his shoes, dress shoes as
wow.
a kid, and
dress
I was
shoes.
I felt like I was the coolest kid around because I had a pair of Bjorn Borg dress shoes.
How'd that turn out?
I love those shoes. It's too bad I grew out of them. It's too bad I grew. They were beautiful. They were really beautiful.
Family
shoes.
Heirlooms moving forward,
man,
for
I'm
you.
I'm telling
Sam.
You, I'm gonna hand them to. I'm not
can
gonna.
We
have
can go back to the stove and get some more.
I'm not sure if you can, but if I could, I would. If I could, I would. All right. If you missed it, we had Brock Besser and Keith Ballard on at the same time, and they're gonna join us yet again. We're gonna replay that interview right here on Sportsnet 650.
It's the Playbook with Satyar Shah and John Jang on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Final hour of the show here on Sportsnet 650. It is John Jang's final hour before he takes a day off, but you're back on Monday.
Back on Monday.
Yes, sir.
You guys are not.
No, I am gone again next week, but I'm back again for 2 weeks.
I have no idea. I think I'm in.
You are in.
You're a man of mystery, Vic Nizar. Can't read you.
Vic doesn't even know what a schedule is.
No, I don't.
Let's pull the curtain back a little bit here because, and I know Art and C-Mac, the two leaders, are listening right now, but it's like, you know, nobody has any idea what Vic's doing. So get on the program, boys.
No, I said I'm very flexible in my days off.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't even sure if I was supposed to work this week, and then it was like, hey, you're working this week.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's TBD if I'm in next week.
TB12?
Well, if you're not in,
boy,
work on the TB12 method. Yes, it is Throwback Thursday, too. We'll have time for one more request. And I think that was Eminem, the request we got earlier, Till I Collapse. I don't know who somebody signed it, but we got a text message about it, so there you go.
It was unsigned.
It was very specific. Till I Collapse, Eminem, The Eminem Show, 2002. Like, they laid out all the relevant information.
And we had to play it.
You know what it's funny because albums and songs take you back in time.
Mm.
2002 was my grad year, and that album, The Eminem Show.
You can't grad when you're 32.
I spent too much time in school, man. It was hard getting past grade 8 math. Like, no, literally, it was hard getting past
grade 8. No, it really was.
It was. But I remember in 2002, that album, because during grad parties and everything, like, they would play, because back in the day you just play CDs, because this is before iPods were like huge. Like, you remember you had the little egg iPods that had like three songs?
Yeah.
MP3 players with like 10 megabytes of space. You could put four songs on it. So usually you just play albums. Either you made a burned CD or you just play an album start to finish.
Right.
And The Eminem Show, let's just say it got played a lot in that year.
I bet. Still a good pump up song, pump up jam.
The only CD I've ever broken. And not, I mean, like, snapped.
Mm.
I played it so much that it stopped working.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't even know that was even possible. Right. Fugees.
Fugees?
The score.
Fugees?
Yeah.
The score. That's a great album.
It was a great album. I couldn't believe when it stopped working.
You want to talk about an album that doesn't have any bad songs? That's an album that has zero bad songs.
You boys want to hear something sad? So I got one of those.
I thought you were saying you never heard of Fugees.
No, I was like, no,
sure.
Come on.
Not for sure. That was
you know those, you know, like a little album book? Like, you know, you place the CDs and all, and, you know, there's however many pages. On my way back from the East Kootenai last summer, I had stuffed that particular album book that's got, like, that decade's worth of all the albums I bought into the box somewhere, and I guess I put in, like, a bottle of alcohol in there, too. Anyways, it leaked out, and, of course, all the albums got wet, and because alcohol ruins everything, all the albums are now blank.
It's a great statement for life, though. Alcohol ruins everything.
Yeah, it's not quite.
Make good choices.
It's not quite like Homer Simpson said, the cure to all problems is alcohol. No, it's the start of all your problems. It's
basically
the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Don't pack your albums and alcohol together. Don't do that.
Life lessons from John Jang. Let's just put it that way.
Mm.
Did we get Don Danged or no? That's not quite a Don Danged. That's close.
Oh, that's a legitimate piece of advice.
It was a legitimate piece of advice.
Yeah. The CDs may have gotten Don Danged.
Yeah, basically.
The CDs most certainly got Don Danged. And you see, okay, one of the things that Canucks fans like a lot and enjoy a lot every year is the mic'd up at the draft. And the Canucks have released theirs from the 2018 draft.
Right.
And it's funny, as soon as the draft ended, I was getting tweets and texts. Hey, do you know anything about when the Canucks are going to release? I'm like, how would I know? I don't put that stuff together. I have no idea. I'm waiting just like you are, because I find this fascinating.
I kind of wish Sportsnet 650 would have come out with audio and video of you guys down at the draft. You, Aldi, Scotty, Andrew, and just like your reactions as the pick were coming in. I know, because you,
my reaction,
been like a little anime version of Sat with his eyes all big and sparkly when you see Quinn Hughes available at number 7.
Did you see? So when my reaction, you know, everybody knows. I've been talking about Quinn Hughes being my favorite defenseman in this draft outside of Rasmus Dahlin since November, mm-hmm. essentially, right? Yeah. I've been talking Quinn Hughes up for almost a year.
Yeah, you're his agent, I guess.
Yeah, agent to be. I wish I could get a little piece of that.
No, he's his family advisor.
NCAA
eligibility,
yes,
my
exactly.
bad. My
family
bad.
Advisor. Yeah. But, I mean, so when I saw the Canucks draft Quinn Hughes, I was you couldn't wipe the smile off my face. Because,
right.
I mean, I'm just happy for Canucks fans, for this market. And if he can live up to his potential, he's a really fun guy to cover and watch. And I think, you know, just from a media perspective, the more fun, talented hockey players we have to cover, the more fun it makes our job.
Yeah.
So selfishly, I'm like, I'm all about it.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for Canucks fans in this market that hopefully they get a defenseman who's super talented and fun to watch, entertaining, and can take the Canucks to different heights at some point down the road. So I was just so giddy about Quinn Hughes getting drafted that the media was tweeting my reaction, live reaction. The guys like Beecher and all the other guys out there were like live tweeting my reaction
your boy.
On the draft floor.
Yeah.
So I was pretty excited.
But
not as excited as John Weisbrot.
No,
truthfully. Had a better reaction than Sat.
Yeah, he certainly did. So if you want to check it out, it is on the Canucks Twitter. You can check it out. We'll have some fun with it coming back. But it was fun. The couple of noteworthy things that came out of it. One was, if Jet Wu was not available when the Canucks picked that 37th overall, they would have traded down. You heard that on the clip. And same thing with a third-round pick. If Tyler Madden wasn't there, they were going to move down as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy in charge of the draft has been Judd Brackett, essentially. And you see them being open to doing smart things like moving down unless the guy they want being there.
Some of the conversations with Toronto Kyle Dubas,
mm-hmm.
with Minnesota's Paul Fenton, Rob Blake, and then ultimately with Washington when they actually did move down.
Right. And they were apparently considering a trade down with St. Louis if Jet Wu wasn't available. I know I saw the text as well, guys. I'd rather not acknowledge it. But an interesting one, because a lot of Canucks fans are saying, you know, why don't you try and trade down, recuperate more picks? Well, they eventually did the one, but they liked the players that were available. And I like the players that were available, too. I like Jet.
So we talked about this a lot in the lead-up to the draft. It was how many first-round grades, because we heard from mm-hmm. 25 all the way up to 40.
Mm-hmm.
So when you started looking at Jet Wu, okay, pick 37, you could say maybe they had a second-round grade on them, but when you get a decent offer coming in and they mm-hmm. said, no, we're good, probably a first-round grade
mm-hmm.
on Jet Wu.
Yeah, and the Canucks, when they saw, because we heard this at the draft, and, you know, sometimes you hear things when people tell you, and you're like, hey, take it with a grain of salt. Because anytime a team drafts a player, they're going to say to you publicly, that's our guy. We were going to move down, or we weren't going to do this unless he was there, because you always want to talk up your draft picks. But the beauty of this mic'd up thing is you get live reactions. And what they told us, or Judd Brackett told us, was we really think that Jet Wu has far more upside than people are expecting him to be. And they mentioned the fact that he was injured last year after he got off to a good start. The team made a bunch of trades. And before you knew it, he was playing a more shutdown role, didn't get the same offensive opportunities. And he was also one of the younger guys in the draft. So the Canucks looked at Jet Wu and projected him to be far better than a lot of other people would project him. So we can talk about what you think of Jet Wu or not, but from the Canucks' perspective, they view him as a potential first-round talent, as a potential top-four defenseman that's not just a stay-at-home physical shutdown defenseman, also a puck-moving potential power play contributor as well.
Yep.
So if that's what you're projecting, you took him at 37. To me, the process is the right one on that one. And even if I disagree about the player, and I don't, but if I did, the process matters. And the process on the draft picks the Canucks made this year is hard to quibble with.
I'm going to forecast this now. Canucks fans will have a chance to see Jet Wu in person live in December when he represents Team Canada at the World Juniors this year.
Yeah, well, his
nothing guaranteed, but I got a feeling he's going to be on that team.
And the other one from that clip was they really seemed conflicted. Not about picking Tyler Madden, but the Kings came in with an offer, and they're like, oh, well, what if it was this? And they went back at L.A., and it seems like they said, you know what, Madden's the one we want. We'll stick where we are.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about trading down and it being good, and the Canucks did this last year. They did it again this year. They were open to doing it with the higher picks, but if you love a guy, and part of drafting is you pick your guys, you have your list, and if you think this one guy's going to be really good and he's there, don't pass on him. You know, so I think the process for the draft was right. Will it all work out? We'll find out. But we did have Brock Besser, another successful Canucks draft pick in the 20 range a few years back, and Keith Ballard join us. And we start the interview off talking to Brock about what kind of chirps does his coach in the beauty league, Keith Ballard, say on the bench?
you know, a little bit of barking, but, you know, it's not too bad. He might throw a couple chirps here and there, but it's all fun, and, you know, it's fun to have him be on the bench.
And, Keith, thanks for joining us on Sportsnet 650. So, I mean, you're legendary for your chirping and your jokes. So what do you say to these players on the bench when you try to get them motivated?
You know what? There's not a lot. There's not a lot. I had to get on Brock the first night to shoot more. He was trying to get a little fancy. He was in summer hockey mode, which it is summer, so I don't blame him, but it feels a lot better to win at the end of the night than it does to lose. So he's got a decent shot, so I want him to shoot.
Yeah, I think that shot has been okay. I mean, we're not completely impressed with the shot. It's okay.
He can work on it, but it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, how many shots did he take that game when he scored three, Keith?
I think four.
Right. 75%, that's okay.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. 75% all season would be great.
Keith, I mean, what is it like for you these days? You're back home in Minnesota. You're a few years away from the NHL, and yet you're having fun coaching there with the Beauty League. You must be enjoying a little bit of life right now, as is, right?
You know what? I am. I'm helping my wife chase three kids around, able to be at a lot of their activities, a lot of their stuff, and just able to just be in the community a little bit more. Reach out to a few different areas and keep myself busy. So I'm having a great time. I'm really enjoying this.
And Brock, of course, Minnesota being home for you, you're right back there with your family. You're having fun at the Beauty League. And let's just get it clear and in the air. You're pretty much 100%, right?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I just saw the Vancouver doctors about 2 weeks ago again, and you know, they gave me the green light. So I've been going full tilt here the past week and a half, so it's been good, and it feels really good to be back.
Pretty curious, because Sven Berchi got married over the weekend, if I'm not mistaken. I'm wondering if you got an invite, because he was on this radio station a couple of weeks ago, and he said Travis Green did not make the cut. I'm wondering if you did.
Yeah, I made the cut. Well, at the end of the year, when we're all here together, a few of us guys, I was a little about getting an invite, but so I was on him about getting an invite, but unfortunately I couldn't make it, so I feel kind of bad that I didn't get out there, but I definitely made the cut.
And Brock, you know, you mentioned you feel 100%. Just for your confidence, how did it feel getting on that ice the first game, scoring a couple of goals? Like, did that just mentally help you pass a hurdle?
Yeah. I didn't know how I was going to be when I got back, and you know how my wrist shot or my wrist was going to affect me when I was shooting the puck. And you know, to get a couple of those goals where I was shooting the puck, I think it gave me some confidence. But again, I think I still got a lot of stuff to work on the rest of the summer, so I need to make sure I keep attacking that.
And Keith, I mean, you had a long, successful career in the National Hockey League, of course, and you know, you went through your injuries as well. So when you see a young guy go through a pretty serious injury the way Brock did, I mean, what kind of advice would you impart on a young guy like that to try to get back from an injury like that?
Well, I think he's covered it. I mean, just doing all the rehab, making sure you're on top of it and even ahead of it, he's done. And it's shown just watching him on the ice the last couple weeks. And that's the big part of it. You know, at this stage right now, that's your job. That's what you need to do. And that's got to be your focus, whether, you know, it's the rehab, the extra training, whatever you're doing, is just making sure you're going to be ready to go on schedule or ahead of schedule. And he's done a great job of that.
And if you were playing against Brock Besser in today's NHL, how would you go about defending that shot?
I'd change right away. Let somebody else do it.
Somebody else's problem.
Well, you know, the release is outstanding. There are certain guys that have the ability to understand how to get open and where to be and when to be there, and Brock has that. And that's a special quality that I think I taught him last week. So I'm going to take a little credit, but no, there's guys that have that, and Brock has that, which is special.
We're going to try and get a petition going for you to get considered for the Jack Adams, assuming Brock does have a very successful second campaign here, Keith. But I'm curious with you, Keith, you're having fun, of course, coaching in the Beauty League, but is this something that you'd like to take a couple of steps further along, maybe coach at a professional level at some point?
You know what? I have a lot of respect for coaches with how much time there is into it and the work that they put into it. I love the idea of coaching, but right now my coaching focus is going to be this fall on my kids' Mite teams. And that's kind of the extent for me. I love coaching the kids. Mm-hmm. I coach a fall summer high school league, and for this summer for the Beauty League, that's good for me. The time constraints away from your family and what you do. I mean, like I said, I love the idea of coaching, but when you look at all it entails, coaches are special people, no matter what level they're at. Mm-hmm. They're volunteering their time. Not many of them get paid for it. So it's when you have good coaches, you have to appreciate them.
You know what? One step at a time, I think, is the right way to go about things. And Brock, you know, I hate to bring up the business side of the game, but you are entering the final year of your ELC. And a lot of Canucks fans wondering, is that something you'd like to take care of sooner rather than later? Or would you prefer just waiting and see how the season plays out for you first?
Yeah, I'm definitely not in any rush. Like you said, there's a year left on my contract. So, you know, I'm more worried about focusing on my game and coming back and trying to have a better year than I did last year and fix some parts of my game up. So, you know, that's something that will be dealt with when, you know, if they bring it up and talk about it. But, you know, I'm not too worried about it.
We're talking to Brock Besser and Keith Ballard here on Sportsnet 650. And, you know, Brock, you had a really successful rookie season, and it's always difficult coming back for your sophomore year. You know, just talking to people around the beauty league, because there's a lot of NHL players who have a lot of talent there. Have you been picking people's brains about how to always be one step ahead of the players? Because it's always about adjusting and adding a little extra to your game as you move forward.
Yeah. You know, just with some of the guys I worked out with, just, you know, already training and just talking to them. I mean, I know that the league's not going to get any easier, and it's only going to get harder as, you know, you continue to play in the league. So, I mean, you know, I think I kind of learned that a little bit last year as the season went on. It got harder and harder. So, you know, that's why some of us are thankful for that. Going through in the summer with, knowing that you need to come back better than you were the year before.
And Keith, I mean, you played in Vancouver in 2011 during that magical run, and you've been here too when things didn't go as well. I mean, what sort of advice would you have for Brock when things are going well? This market is fantastic. Everything is beautiful. Everything is fine. But when things don't go right, especially after you spend a couple of years here, things can get a bit more dicey, or at least there's more attention and criticism. How would you tell a young guy to do that?
There is, but I think, you know, I mentioned this the other day. I was talking to someone, you know, another station in Vancouver, and the Brock's ability to just understand himself as a player and his belief in himself is outstanding. And, you know, I learned that from guys there who have been in the market, you know, a guy like Kevin Bieksa or the Sedin, those guys who have been through the highs and lows, they know what they do when they're successful. They understand their game, and a lot of this stuff doesn't bother them. And that's what makes you good in a big market. A lot of people can hide in certain markets and, you know, not feel the heat when it's not going well. But the guys that have that ability to just move on and understand and be confident and comfortable with who they are as a player, those are guys that succeed, and that's what I see with Brock.
That's one of the things we've noticed about Brock too. And for Brock, I mean, you know, I'm sure you're excited about some of the young guys coming in. Pedersen this year is looking like he's going to make the team. If Quinn Hughes signs, he might be there in training camp. When we start looking at some of the young players on this roster or are budging to make this team in a year or two, how excited does that make you, Brock?
Yeah, no, it's you know, it is exciting. You know, obviously, to get to play with the Sedins for their final year, and then now it's taking that transition to the younger core group of guys. It's fun to see, and you know, I'm definitely excited to see what Pedersen brings to training camp and how he does. And then, you know, obviously, with Quinn Hughes, if he signs, seeing some video on him, it just looks like he's a tremendous skater and you know, really skilled and can move the puck well. So, you know, it's exciting, and it's definitely going to be a process.
Chatting with Brock Besser and Keith Ballard here on the Playbook Sportsnet 650. And Brock, a lot of people are, of course, naturally excited about Quinn Hughes and what he could do for the Canucks. But you're a player who did spend two seasons at North Dakota. Can you quickly explain how that second season there at the NCAA really benefited you in getting more prepared for the NHL?
Yeah, you know, it did definitely benefit me a lot, not just from the on-ice aspect, but on the off-ice. I think I really got a lot stronger in my second year. You know, I had to learn some stuff on ice, playing in games where, you know, guys would key on you more often than not and, you know, try to rattle you or whatever. So, you know, I think that kind of helped me develop as a player too. And, you know, I battled through some injuries my second season, so I kind of had to go through that. But, you know, I think it just made me more of a player on and both off the ice.
Still over a point per game in that second year while you were dealing with that wrist injury, which, by the way, of course, looks pretty darn good nowadays. But, Keith, for you, also a similar mobile defenseman back in your playing days, do you remember your first season and some of the challenges that might have really caught you off guard when it came to getting ready for the NHL? And you also spent, I believe it was 3 years at college hockey before making the jump to the pros.
I did, yeah. You know, I think the biggest thing was the daily grind. It's easy to be excited early. You're running on adrenaline for a long time in the season, and eventually that hits you. So that's where I think for a young player that being able to withstand, you know, you get past the 40-50 game mark, and now you've still got 30-40 games left. That's the hard part. And being able to do that, and once you get used to that, the league is a lot easier.
And before we let you guys
go. Hey, guys, sorry, yeah. I don't want to cut you off. I'm at a charity golf tournament, and it's pouring. They just told us to get to our cart.
All right. So, it's all good.
I'm going to leave you two with Brock. I'm really sorry.
No worries. Sounds good,
Keith. Either that or my phone goes goes haywire getting poured on.
It's all good. Thanks.
I'm really sorry.
It's all good.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for joining us, Keith. And before we let you go, Brock, and I know you got to get to your training as well, but you know, one of the real special things that we notice about you is how close you are with your family. And of course, we remember in your first NHL game when Willie Desjardins had your father Duke come out, read the lineup and announce it, everything. And your father Duke was behind the bench with Keith Ballard too at the Beauty League. How special is it for you that you have your dad here every step along the way?
Oh yeah, it's awesome. You know, my family is extremely supportive of me, and I wouldn't be where I am today without them. So, you know, it's fun to see when he's beyond the bench every game. He might even be a better coach than Keith, honestly. So it's you know, it's fun to come back to the bench and you know, hear what he has to say to me, because he hasn't coached me for a while. So, you know, that's fun. And then my sister's running around the rink too, and then my mom's usually watching the stands. So. You know, it's fun to see him
there. Yeah, it's awesome. And Brock, listen, we're all happy that you're doing well and feeling healthy, and we look forward to seeing you here in training camp. Keep lighting the lamp in the Beauty League and enjoy your family, and you'll be back in Vancouver talking to us idiots again very soon.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Take care,
right,
Brock.
Thank you. That was Brock Besser and Keith Ballard joining us here
on
call the Playbook.
An idiot?
Well, I mean, it goes without saying, John.
Wow. you say it all the time.
Yeah, and you open yourself up to it. It's like, don't show your butt and you don't get kicked in it.
What?
Yeah.
I could go back through interviews when you call yourself a meathead in interviews.
Yeah, yes. But meathead is a more delicate way of putting it.
Really?
No, it's not. They're the exact same.
Sure it is. Idiot has a more negative connotation to it. That's all I'm
than
saying.
Than a meathead? A meathead doesn't have a negative connotation?
It's more fun.
Really?
Yeah.
I've met a lot of meatheads. I can't say they're fun.
There is such a thing as an idiot savant. There's
yes.
No meathead savant.
No.
Meathead savant? There could be.
Meathead. I mean, my idea of a meathead savant is some dude at the gym who did something pretty cool. You're like, he might be a meathead savant when it comes to lifting weight. And that's about it.
Bro.
And that's pretty much it. Yeah. We know you don't.
Yeah, I don't need to. Yeah, I stay lean, anchored to the ground with my hot takes.
Yeah, so you just called yourself a hot take artist. You don't need me to sewer you, buddy. You do it all by yourself.
Sometimes I have good takes.
Sometimes I have good takes. And yeah, I don't know what's going on. But regardless.
That was a fun chat with Brock and Keith. Definitely.
Yes. Brock and Keith. We had a good time talking to those guys. And on the other side, we're going to give you a bit of an update on what's going on in the British Open. The first round is coming to an end. Tiger Woods has done an okay job so far. And the ESPYs happened yesterday. Something that's never happened before happened at the ESPYs. It was also a bit of the subject matter was heavy and strong for good reason on a few different topics. And I was glad to see them do so. There was also some fun with Ovechkin winning an award. And the game of the year, the game that ESPN gave the ESPY to for the most entertaining game was one I was not very happy about.
Uh-oh.
Us Canadians are not happy about this because the game in 2014 was far better than this game in 2018, and that game got zero love from ESPN, and I know why, and we'll tell you why.
Oh.
Right here on the home of the Canucks, the new home of the Vancouver Giants, Sportsnet 650.
This is The Playbook with Satyar Shah and John Jang. United by sport, we are Sportsnet 650.
LeBron is the newest Los Angeles transplant. Los Angeles transplant is also what he Googles when he needs new hair. That's okay. Like LeBron, when he hosted, he made fun of me too. I'd say we're even. J.R. Smith would say we're up by one.
Zinger from Danica Patrick hosting the ESPYs yesterday, the retired race car driver. And this song, Silver Sun Pickups, Lazy Eye by Silver Sun Pickups, by request during TBT, hashtag Throwback Thursday, from Buzz Driver. So Buzz, that song goes out to you. He sent a text in saying, what baseball needs is parity. Half the cities in the league know what they're going to need, a Leicester City-type season to even win a championship.
Mm.
And then he said, please play Lazy Eye by Silver Sun Pickups. That is from Buzz Driver to our 650-650 text message inbox. Hope you enjoyed that song coming in. And the ESPYs, I watched most of the ESPYs yesterday, and, you know, it's an award show. And generally speaking, when it comes to award shows, John, I really don't care.
Sure.
Because it is a sports angle to it, we watch it to see what happened and everything, and it was pretty entertaining. I did like them taking some time to touch a few serious issues. The Jim Kelly moment about what he's gone through, about his son, too, it was really heart-wrenching. It was a real tearjerker moment. And then the most powerful moment came at the very end, when over 100 U.S. Olympic gymnastic athletes and also Michigan State athletes who were sexually abused by Larry Nassar, they came out and talked about how they went through that. And it was really nice of ESPN to talk about a couple of serious issues and giving them the time they deserve. And if you hadn't seen that, I think it's powerful enough to go back and check it out. But it was also a light show and some fun things happened as well. And
mm-hmm.
You know, there's always controversy when there is an award show. And once again, I don't really care that much about award shows and who gets what. But it is somewhat noteworthy that for the first time ever, a hockey player got the Male Athlete of the Year, and that was Alex Ovechkin. And do you think, we mentioned this a bit earlier on in the show as well, how ESPN, I think, is going to come back and try to get the NHL as part of the TV deal when it comes up in 2020.
Mm.
But how transcending was that cup run by Alex Ovechkin in the storyline that he became the athlete of the year?
Beat out Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Beat out James Harden.
Yes.
I mean, that's not easy to do given the seasons both of those players
had. But those guys,
had.
Well, you know what happened? Those guys did not win a title.
Truth.
And Alex Ovechkin did. And truth. I think Ovechkin's story, especially with how he... People counted him out. For how many years did we now say Ovechkin's not a winner? He's not going to win come playoff time. The Capitals can't even get past the second round of the playoffs.
Right.
Playoff failure. And you know what? In the first round, they were a couple of posts away from losing in overtime in Game 7 against the Columbus Blue Jackets, which tells you how funny and fickle hockey can be, because their playoff could have been over in the first round
right.
very easily. They get fortunate. It goes the other way. They win the series. And before you know it, they end up hoisting the cup. If that one goal goes in, we're back talking about here are the Capitals choking again. So sometimes the margin of victory and luck really has to be on your side. It's so small, right? But it was a great year.
Good to be lucky.
And it was nice to see Ovechkin get that love. So that's a good part. Let's go with the bad part about this. So, Bic, you watched this too. The game of the year, as voted on by ESPN, there had a few different... nominees. Obviously, the Georgia-Oklahoma Sooners game, which went to overtime. A fantastic game in the BCS final. It was in the semifinal before they got to the final. One of the best games we've seen.
Rose Bowl.
But the game of the year was the U.S. women beating the Canadian women in the gold medal game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great game. It really was. It was entertaining. It was fun. But overtime wasn't great.
Overtime was awful.
Yeah, it wasn't a fun overtime. Like, the game just didn't,
nothing
happened.
They were tired.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Nothing was happening in overtime.
We were waiting for shootouts, and then sure enough, we did go to shootouts.
So they win, and the reason ESPN gave this award, and I have no problem with the women winning it. That's fine. No problem. But what happened in 2014 when our ladies, the Canadian ladies, played maybe the best international hockey game in women's hockey history? Mm-hmm. It won the best hockey games, period, that I've ever seen in my life. When Canada was down against the U.S. in the gold medal game with the goalie pulled. Remember that puck that hit the post?
Mm-hmm.
The open net. Goalie's pulled. Empty net for Canada.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. fires the puck down the ice. It hits the post on an empty net. This close to ending Canada's dreams of coming back. Canada comes back, ties the game. Marie-Philippe Poulin, the hero. They win in overtime. That game wasn't even nominated in 2014.
Mm.
And that was way better hockey game than the one we saw between Canada and the U.S. this year. Yet, that one got no love, and the Americans gave this one the game of the year.
And it's not like in 2014 there was great selection. I guess you could make the argument, well, this one, this year there weren't as many great games. No, that's not the case. It was the L.A. Rangers game. mm-hmm. in the final. I'm assuming it was the one where Martinez wins it.
Right.
It was the NFL playoffs, the Colts and Chiefs. Remember when Andrew Luck was down 20 points?
They came back to win.
And they came back and win. And it was like 42-41. Then it was the winner was Auburn versus Alabama in the Iron Bowl. It was the SEC championship. And Alabama kicks a field goal. Chris Davis catches it, 109-yard return to win it with zero on the clock. Dramatic moment.
Great game.
We're not taking anything away from it. But to not give it, to not even nominate the women's gold medal game,
yeah.
and then to give the gold medal, the award this time around, it looks weird. That game was way better.
Hashtag petty.
Yes.
That's what we just have to call them out because 2014, that hockey game between Canada and the U.S., our women coming back and winning that game, one of the most dramatic hockey games we've ever seen on the international stage, got no love.
We don't
none.
Lie.
No, none.
It's because Canada won in 2014.
Exactly.
Sure.
They don't love us.
I know.
They don't have anything to do with us.
Yeah. So you know what, ESPN, I talked about how ESPN is going to get the NHL rights. You know what? No NHL for you.
Outdoor Life Network for life, baby.
Go retroactively get this right and fix it. And then
we'll talk. But you know, the ESPYs, when I think of the ESPYs, I think of two things. Mm. One, Norm MacDonald coming in and absolutely just just putting everybody in their place, making the most awkward moments in ESPYs history with his jokes. But the most fun moment and the most memorable moment for me is obviously Jamie Foxx.
He was the best host.
The best host ever. Serenading Serena Williams. This is a young Serena he was trying to woo, and this is how he was trying
to. But Serena, this song is dedicated to you, and it's simply named. It's coming out on the ESPN record, so make sure you go get that as soon as you can. It's called Can I Be Your Tennis Ball? Can I be your tennis ball? Tennis ball, tennis ball. You can smack me up against the wall, baby. Do it slow or do it fast. Can I fit inside your bang, bang?
That goes on and on and on. And then the next year, he came back and did another version with a boy group.
A cappella group.
It was really good. Yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah.
I thought Danica did
She did a good
okay.
job.
Okay.
You know, Danica, she just recently retired. She's going into the media side of things. And, you know, trust me, as a broadcaster myself and ours, I mean, we've gone through it. You don't get better right away. It takes time. You got to put the work in. She had some really good moments. I'm sure she wants to iron some things out, but she showed some potential.
Mm-hmm. She had flashes like that. Yeah. JR one was pretty funny.
That was a great joke.
I thought a lot of people were awkward, were just like, they panned to the crowd when she made the transplant joke, and they're like, oh, boy.
Oh, boy, where's
going on?
She's
like, no, you bring it back.
Yeah, yeah. No, she did a pretty good job with that, and I thought one thing I liked about her was she embraced the role. Mm-hmm. Like, she was doing those rap video things. They did a lot of skits and
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, so it showed me that she is willing to go out there and try different things, and I think, you know, commend her for it. I think she did a good job. It was solid, and if she gets a chance to do it again, I'm sure it'll be better next time.
Absolutely. Hey, practice makes perfect. Pardon me. Ooh. The coffee's starting to wear off here, boys. Practice makes perfect, and for Danica Patrick, she spent an entire career spending...
But we talking about practice, man.
That's
what are
true.
We talking about?
Sorry, Isaiah.
Practice? Sorry.
That's not Isaiah. That's Allen Iverson.
Small, diminutive NBA forwards who got a bit of an attitude.
NBA point guards.
Yeah, yeah.
Not forwards.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying here. I got off track. Where was I? What were we talking about? ESPYs. Yeah, ESPYs. Danica Patrick. She spends most of her time in her career in that car alone, right? All by herself. Despite the fact that she's a winner, it takes something else to go in front of a stage in front of all your, you know, professional peers and to do something like that and show a bit of personality. It's not always easy to do, but kudos to her. And kudos to Chloe Kim, by the way. Big winner last night. Of course, she being the American, half Korean, Olympian, who had a heck of a performance in Pyeongchang.
Yeah, was a female athlete of the year.
Female athlete. She won numerous awards.
Walked away with three.
She's like, I think still 18, 19 years old. So a bright career ahead of her. But it was a good performance there by the ESPYs.
Yeah, I mean, it was all right. It was not too bad, but we just had a bone to pick. So we made sure we even
score. You're huffing
and
puffing.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I was just, you know, I was, why did our Canadian women not get the love in 2014 when they played one of the best hockey games we've seen on international
level?
Would
you guys have picked that same game for 2014 or 2018 best game?
For, in my opinion, the best game this past year?
Yeah, past calendar year.
I don't know. I really like that Oklahoma-Georgia game. It was one of the best football games all year.
That was a good game.
The national championship was also a pretty good
game.
That was
pretty good.
A Super Bowl was good. It wasn't my favorite, but like,
you know,
I can understand.
National championship was maybe even the better game. Alabama and Georgia, and how that game unfolded, and
so many
quarterback
and
getting hurt
going
coming
into
in.
It.
Yeah.
There's plenty to choose from.
Yeah. My boy Baker Mayfield was a college athlete of the year on the men's side.
Yep.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, won the he also the first overall pick in the NFL as well.
Your Cleveland Browns. I showed you this on Twitter. They made this little video, sort of doing their version of the Office intro. And it's quite humorous if you are into the Cleveland Browns, like our boy Sat here. There's something about seeing Myles Garrett wearing like a Dwight Schrute getup.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I haven't had a chance to fully watch it. I watched bits and pieces.
I don't even know if Baker's in it.
Should you be concerned? Because there was a picture on Twitter. Oh. For Fortnite fans, there's a very popular gamer, Ninja. Mm-hmm. He was posting a picture with Jarvis Landry and Baker, so maybe Baker's a big Fortnite guy.
Oh. I'm worried that he's going to be playing Fortnite too much and not be good at his job. No. Yeah, I'm not quite worried about that.
David Price,
I will say
hurts the wrist.
The angle they took the picture at looks like Baker's putting some LBs.
Uh oh,
getting bigger.
Uh oh, and he's not talking about stronger. Linebackers. No,
but Sat all knows about. Sat knows about optical illusions and pictures. Mm-hmm.
Yes, he posted a photo of me when I was watching an Iran game, and let's just say I look like I have a giant pouch.
That's exactly how Baker looked.
That's how you're sitting. Yeah. It's an optical illusion.
He's standing, and it's very awkward.
Yeah. You know, I'm not saying, I'm chiseled or anything, but, that was just one of those moments of like, listen, that photo is not representative of how I truly look.
Hashtag, yeah, facts only.
It happens. Sometimes optical illusions.
Hashtag abs only.
Abs only.
Yeah, not quite that washboardy, but yeah, it wasn't quite as pouchy. I wasn't as portly as I looked in that photo. Let's just put it that way.
That was more like, instead of talking about a six-pack, we're talking about a kegger in that particular photo. I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, I know. That was,
Not your finest moment.
No, not my finest moment as captured by Bic.
That's what I'm here for.
You're supposed to make us look better, not make us look worse, buddy.
No, I'm supposed to make you sound better.
Oh, okay.
The look is all up to you.
No. The way you took that photo is all on you.
Dan in Brentwood has a question.
Oh, he does. Okay.
650. Okay. I'm confused if their criteria is best game or best outcome.
Yes.
Like, if Canada made one more shootout goal, one more save, would that have still won?
No,
process,
it wouldn't have.
Process over outcome.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're all about process. If the process was right, we'd been like, all good. But the process on this one, I call BS on.
Yeah.
So I'm with you, Dan.
It would have been 99% the same, so it should be. But I feel it's more about the legacy for the moment when they broke the streak of 20 years of Canada winning internationally. Dan and Brentwood putting it on the ball right there.
Yeah, okay, I understand. So it's a legacy thing. But if it's a legacy thing, then how is it the game of the year? From an American's perspective, let's put ourselves in their shoes. It's a big deal for the women. They haven't done so.
Sure.
It's taken 20 years. It culminated to that moment. It means more to the American audience. To them, it's a bigger game. Okay.
And truthfully, they had a good team.
What? I can accept that as a reasonable response from the Americans.
Sure.
I'll say okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'll retract some of my
criticism. So much better.
Exactly. Yeah. But the game in 2014, man, I'm telling you, our women need credit for that game.
Truth.
Like, how many international hockey games have been more entertaining than Canada, U.S., the women, 2014 gold medal game?
Mm.
There's a few. Mm-hmm. The gold medal game, U.S. and Canada.
2010?
In Salt Lake.
2010's
gold
medal
game.
Well, Salt Lake, that one turns out to be a blowout.
It did, but the game was pretty fantastic. I mean, some great goals were scored. You want to go back to the Canada Cups, I guess. You can go back to the Summit Series. I'm sure there are games you can pull out there. But yeah, I think we're just standing for our women.
Were ESPYs around in 2010 for the golden goal?
ESPY's been around for a long time.
So then, at that case, did the 2010 moment did it capture the award? We got to go back and do our homework because that is
Google is your friend.
Hold on, honey. 2010 ESPYs.
Actually, it won.
It did.
See, yeah.
Okay, so do we call it a push? The fact that there were
no, because that one was so great.
Yeah,
I mean that one was easy.
Viking Stad has a great has a great tweet. Football wise, I love when Bobby Boucher showed up at halftime and the Mud Dogs won the Bourbon Bowl. This is going back to Waterboy. Well played, Viking Stad.
That's
well
not football. Played. That's fool's ball.
Yeah. So that's an inside joke between some friends of mine. That quote. So that is a great reference right there.
Oh, fantastic work!
Really reaching deep for that reference. I like it.
Oh yeah, and reach deep. It's coming up.
Special guest
today, Irfan Ghaffar.
Intrepid
is,
reporter.
Irfan Ghaffar is co-hosting with Dan Riccio today. Mm-hmm. Not a guest, but they do have J.D. Bunkus joining him today from Toronto. And if you want to talk about one of the youngest and brightest basketball analysts in Toronto, it is J.D. Bunkus, who does a real good job on The Good Show on the Fan 590 Sportsnet.
And also Free Association podcast.
Yes, with Donovan Bennett, who we had on yesterday. So make sure you listen to that if you want to know the latest on that trade. And, you know, I did have a couple of thoughts on this trade between between the Raptors and the San Antonio Spurs, Kawhi Leonard ending up in Toronto. And, you know, we mentioned this earlier. News came out last night from Adrian Wojnarowski, the preeminent NBA insider. And he said, yeah, Kawhi is warming up to the idea of playing for the Toronto Raptors. And why wouldn't he? Number one, $20 million he's owed. He's going to take the money. He's not going to sit there and be fine. The other part about this is if he sits out all year or doesn't want to play, well, that contract gets put down another year. So he has to come in and play in 2019-2020 regardless. So regardless of what happens, he's going to have to fulfill his responsibility. And it's in his best interest to have a good year playing for the Toronto Raptors to build up his value.
Mm.
And if you look at the Toronto Raptors team right now, where would you say they rank in the East?
Arguably top three. Arguably because the Celtics, they're going to get their two best players back fully healthy. 76ers continue to rise, depending on the health of Joel Embiid. Raptors, though, they arguably got the best player out of the East, if we're talking about Kawhi Leonard and wanting to be 100% motivated to play. So it all depends on how the Boston Celtics do and how the 76ers do. But you got to give Toronto credit. It might be a one-year gamble at the very end, but if we're talking about a chance to beat and emerge the East, I can get on board with it. I can get on board with it. I just don't know if we've seen, first of all, the best out of DeMar DeRozan now going to join a legendary coaching
Pops. Yeah, but I don't see DeMar DeRozan getting that much better. He's in his late 20s.
If he can play better defensively, if that's one thing Pops can instill within him.
Maybe slightly better
defensively. Becomes a top 10 player, not a top 15 player, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, his defense has to improve quite a bit to be a top 10 player.
I agree.
Like, a lot. Is he going to improve that much for a guy who's a mid-range shooter? Also, LaMarcus Aldridge. I'm sure he can be a bit better. I agree that Greg Popovich is a good coach, will be a bit better. But, I mean, essentially at this point, players are who they are.
If the Milwaukee Bucks also make another step, because when you talk about the best player in that conference, Kawhi's in that, obviously.
Yeah.
Kyrie. But Giannis. Probably better than Kyrie is Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yes.
And if they make a step, that brings them, and of course, Joel Embiid. But those are kind of the power four now.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the Raptors could easily separate from that group.
Yeah.
Like, the Celtics are the one that's going to stick around. They'll be there.
They're the best team.
Because they got youth on their side.
They're one or two no matter what.
Yeah, and really, the Sixers, young teams take a while to really find their groove.
And they need
Sixers
more shooting.
Close. They need a bit more shooting. But if Markelle Fultz takes a step, if Embiid shows he's better, and Simmons was a rookie, don't forget. I mean, I know he was a second year in the NBA.
He still needs some things. He needs a shot.
Mm-hmm. But he might get better. They got J.J. Redick back, too. So the Sixers are a bit of a wild card. Right now, I'd say the Raptors are ahead of them. I'd have them right behind the Celtics. And if you go into a seven-game series, Celtics and Raptors, as it stands, it would be maybe a 6-7-game series. It could go either way. I would give Boston the edge right now as we stand in July. But it could be a lot closer. You start going through that Raptors lineup, there's depth. You have Lowry. You have Van Vliet, DeLon Wright, Norman Powell. You have Danny Green. You have Kawhi Leonard, CJ Miles. I'm not the biggest Serge Ibaka fan, but if you look at him as a extra piece around with Valanciunas and Siakam, and then I left out the biggest key there, OG, who could take a massive step next
season. Let me ask you guys this. You're the Raptors GM. You're Masai. You're at the deadline. Your team is, let's say, somewhere in the top three in the East. You trade out or do you bring in?
Well, if you're top three, you trade in.
That's right. Yeah.
Of course.
But but at this time, there's no guarantee that Kawhi is going to sign an extension.
I'm trying to move out one of the bigs, I think, to get a little bit more star power kind of thing.
Right.
Like,
This is assuming Kawhi hasn't given you a firm answer that he's going
to
resign.
Considering they're capped out, they're going to have to send salary out regardless if there's somebody
in. If there's a way you can move off of Ibaka or JV or something like that, then that's what I'm looking to do. And not only say move out or bring in, it just kind of like shift the pieces. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
No, if you are looking top three and you have a need on the team, and it depends. Like if OG Anunoby takes a big step and is averaging in the teens and has a big year, you may not need that extra player. If all of a sudden Van Vliet gets better, Wright gets better, or Norman Powell shows some potential, you may not even need to make an addition. It really comes down to what happens.
There's a cool potential lineup for them if Siakam, OG, and Kawhi are all playing the 2-3-4. That is awesome. Like, their big lineup could be a lot of fun. And they have multiple ball handlers as well. Like, you could even play OG in a short span at point. And with Kawhi, you can do some cool things with that lineup now that they have a lot of versatility.
Yeah, and Dan in Brentwood makes a really good point to our 650-650 text message inbox. Imagine last year's 76ers with Tatum instead of Fultz.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, they would have been in the finals maybe. It may have pushed the Warriors. Jason Tatum is that good. He went toe-to-toe with LeBron James in Game 7 against the Cavaliers.
With a bit of attitude as well. Let's
he dunked on him, and then he flexed on him, too.
Yeah. Then he regretted it because
LeBron came and took over. Yeah.
Which, by the way, we take a lot of credit for things with the hashtag playbook bump. Do we take credit for this Kawhi trade? Because we phoned Toronto being like, so what's going on in LeBronto? And they were so mad. Oh. Like, we got to go get Kawhi, man.
Yeah.
Playbook's calling us? Are you kidding me?
When the playbook was starting to make fun of you, they felt they had to answer back.
Yep.
And they answered back by getting Kawhi Leonard. And
you're welcome, Toronto.
You're welcome. And it's funny because, you know, we're not Raptors fans, but it's hard to be critical when they make a move like this. And I know a lot of Raptors fans are upset they lost DeMar DeRozan. And I get it. He embraced the city. He wanted to be a Toronto Raptor for life. But you got a better player, and if Kawhi Leonard does decide to stay there long term, and, you know, there aren't many people in basketball whose opinion I respect more than Zach Lowe. And when he comes out and says from ESPN that there is more than a 0% chance that Kawhi could end up staying because of Masai Ujiri, I listen to that. So there is a chance he could stay. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion he's a goner for sure. So many things can happen between now and next summer that you could see Kawhi Leonard stay if everything goes well in Toronto.
Tell you one thing. The next year in Toronto, in terms of the speculation whether he will sign or not, things won't be quiet.
We just got Don danged.
You just got Don danged.
So, I mean, you just had to get that in because you're off tomorrow?
Basically, yeah. I'll see you guys on Monday. Oh, no, I won't. I'll see one of you on Monday, I think.
There we go.
Yeah, you won't see me on Monday. I'm gone. I am gone next week, and thank you yet again. Once again, the John Jang motto. Overpromise, underdeliver, and leave 100%. Everybody wanting more.
100%.
And that is the worst way to live your life.
That's how you get successful in radio. They always want to come back for more.
That is absolutely ass backwards.
It's what the people want.
All right. You're out. Your mic is off. You're gone until next week. Randeep Janda is away, but we have Irfan Ghaffar replacing him with Dan Riccio, and they have JD Bunkus joining him right here on Sportsnet 650.
Coming through loud and clear is now louder and clearer. Sportsnet 650 is available in HD on your HD receiver at 96.9 and HD Channel 3. All week, Sportsnet 650 has your tickets to Western Canada's biggest tennis tournament. The Odlum Brown Fan Open is August 11th through 19th at Hollyburn Country Club. And you've got two chances a day to win. Tune into Under Pressure on the starting lineup with Cebulski, Solkowski, and Dhaliwal. Plus Password with Randy Janda and Dan Riccio on Reach Deep. There's even a third chance to win on Sportsnet Nation. Head to sportsnet.ca/650 for details. The Odlum Brown Fan Open, presented by Sportsnet 650.
Hey, did you know there's another IKEA in the Lower Mainland now?
Not Coquitlam or Richmond?
No, it's a brand new IKEA
distribution
warehouse, and they're hiring.
Really?
Yes, the IKEA
distribution
warehouse is hiring. They're having an open house this week, and they're on the lookout for straightforward, down-to-earth people. Great pay and benefits, and they care about work-life balance.
Where is it?
The IKEA
Distribution
Center hiring event is on now at the new IKEA
Distribution
Center at 7031 York Road, off of Number 8 Road and Westminster Highway.
Metro, Metro, Metro 4, yeah. Metro, Metro, you get more.
Ford employee pricing is back at Metro Ford. Right now, you pay what Ford employees pay on most new 2018 Ford models. It's the deal you've been waiting for at Metro Ford.
Let's go!
hard.
My business isn't small. It's more small-gantic. Or small-normous.
With the new BMO Rewards Business MasterCard, you'll earn rewards points on all the purchases your
small-gantuan
business makes. Plus, get 35,000 welcome points and pay no annual fee for your first year. To apply or see the new small business credit cards, visit BMO.com/business.
It's small-mendous.
When a bank sees your business's potential, not just its size, that's the BMO effect. BMO, we're here to help. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Joey Kenward. It's one thing to drive a luxury SUV, but to drive a Porsche Macan is an SUV unlike any other. Whether you're planning summer trips or continuing your daily work commute, the all-wheel drive Porsche Macan is built for any journey and drives like a sports car. Turn your dream ride into a reality for you or the whole family. Porsche Center Vancouver, located on Terminal Avenue, part of the Dilawri Group of Companies, Canada's largest automotive group.
Make a splash at Granville Starlight and Cascades Casino. Play Cash Splash on now until July 22nd. Swipe your Encore rewards card daily because every swipe wins. And don't miss the cash draw on Sunday where you could win up to $10,000 at 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. What are you waiting for? Cannonball in and make a splash. Play Cash Splash today at Granville Starlight and Cascades Casino.
Must be 19 plus to play. If you gamble, use your game sense.
Order FX today and before the new season of Snowfall premieres tonight at 10 on FX.
She has my smile. She has her father's freckles. She has my mannerisms. The way she rubs the back of her neck when she's really worried. She has his beautiful pale blue eyes. She has my oxycodone.
Some things should never be passed down. Lock up or turn in your prescription drugs. Learn more and find drop-off locations at secureyourmeds.ca. A message from Drug Free Kids Canada.
Hey, it's James Cebulski, and now that the leaves are blooming and the birds are chirping, the open road is calling your name. So get on down to Surrey Honda and get behind the wheel of an all-new Honda Accord. The 2018 edition has been completely redesigned, being named the North American Car of the Year. Its spacious interior offers plenty of comfort, and the Touring Edition brings you features like the high-tech heads-up display in your windshield, notifying you of your speed and local speed limits. What's the wait? Come on, test drive the 2018 Honda Accord and believe the hype yourself. Visiting Surrey Honda, located at 152nd and Fraser Highway.
You and your diesel are like one. Flesh and metal striving to get more out of each day. PDR Diesel Automotive in Langley offers a wide range of performance parts for your diesel pickup. Looking for bigger injectors? A larger turbo? PDR Diesel Automotive has you covered. If you're looking to save a few bucks, PDR Diesel has a great stock of replacement parts at sweet prices. PDR Diesel Automotive in Langley on Mufford Crescent just off the Willowbrook Connector at PDRDiesel.com or call 604-530-3092.
Hey, Joey Kenward here. Your Friday nights are about to get a lot livelier because Friday Night Live is coming back to Hastings Racecourse. Every Friday night between July 27th and August 31st, come out to feel the rush of live thoroughbred racing. Plus, you can enjoy special pricing on food and drinks, food trucks, mini games, prizes, and more. Admission is always free. For all the details, check out hastingsracecourse.com.
Must be 19 plus to place a bet. Know your limit, play within it.
CISL Vancouver is Sportsnet 650, the official home of the Canucks. Listen live at sportsnet.ca/650 through the Sportsnet app or the Radio Player Canada app.
The opening round of the British Open is wrapping up this hour. I'm Adam Forsyth with this Sportsnet Central update. Kevin